taught their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air. And Mumia and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins. And they talked about...
This is the Quality News Network. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says there will be no ceasefire until Hezbollah releases two Israeli soldiers they took 3 weeks ago. That's despite an Israeli strike yesterday that killed up to 60 civilians and brought a storm of criticism from around the world. Israel briefly halted its offensive in order to investigate the incident. Thousands of residents in southern Lebanon took advantage of the halt to flee north. However, Israel resumed strikes today, killing at least one soldier. Israel says both Hezbollah and Lebanon share the blame for the violence. In Washington, President Bush says the U.S. is working with the United Nations to devise a sustainable ceasefire in the region. Mr. Bush will meet with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice tonight when she returns from a trip to the Middle East. At the United Nations, Security Council has indefinitely postponed a meeting to set up a new international peacekeeping force in the area. The Council is instead extending its current peacekeeping mission for another month. In Iraq, four more U.S. Marines were killed over the weekend in Anbar province, bringing the total number of deaths to eight since last week. Also, an Iraqi official said today that there will be some changes in the newly formed cabinet as a result of the sectarian violence. He didn't name names, but said some are calling for the dismissal of Iraq's interior minister. At the United Nations, the Security Council told Iran it has only 1 month to suspend its uranium enrichment program. If the country refuses, economic and diplomatic sanctions could be imposed. But Iran immediately rejected the demand and maintained that its program is for peaceful purposes. On Capitol Hill today, the Senate is expected to vote on opening up more than 8 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico to oil and gas drilling. The House passed a similar measure last month. In Washington, a Senate committee will hold off on voting on whether to permanently appoint John Bolton as U.S. ambassador until September. Democrats say they want more time to investigate his previous behavior. In Los Angeles, British Prime Minister Tony Blair and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger are expected to announce a collaboration to help fight global warming. The Associated Press reports that the two leaders plan to work together to set maximum levels of carbon dioxide emissions and reward businesses that cooperate. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The parent company of United Airlines is reporting its first quarterly profit in 6 years. Revenue reportedly grew to $5.11 billion from last year's $4.42 billion. The FDA is considering a proposal to allow the morning-after pill to be sold over-the-counter to adult women. The pill, Plan B, is manufactured by Bayer Pharmaceuticals. Verizon has launched a new cell phone called Chocolate. It features an iPod-like click wheel and memory card that can hold up to 1,000 songs. Nissan is donating $200,000 to Lebanon to help the country's refugees. The company's CEO is a Lebanese native. Global banking giant HSBC has posted better-than-expected profits for the first half of the year, up 18% to $12.5 billion. The company credits strong growth in emerging markets and investment banking. Fox News has reached a $225,000 settlement with four women who said they were sexually harassed. The settlement also requires employees to undergo training and revisements to employee policies. Henry Paulson will share his views about the economy on Wall Street tomorrow. He was sworn in as the new U.S. Treasury Secretary on July 10th. Light sweet crude settled at $74.40 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 34 points, NASDAQ down 3, S&P 500 down 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I loves me some Mondays. And it is Monday, and I am ever so glad about it. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Your daily confrontation with the facts, the little dust-up that we wind into our evenings with ever since, how long is it? You know, it's mind-boggling to think about how long this has been going on. The program premiered February 2nd, Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2004, on terrestrial radio, and has grown from there to become a worldwide phenomenon. And has done so because of your help. And I just want to let you know that something very special begins tomorrow. I need as many of you as possible on hand for the kickoff at noon Eastern, that's 9 a.m. Pacific, of the Dr. Bill O'Brien Show. I am pleased and tickled and honored to welcome Dr. Bill O'Brien aboard this network. Because he's, especially in that time slot, he's going to offer a real alternative, a real chance to dialogue, to converse, and return this, another couple of hours a day worth of conversation, the dialogue that this nation so desperately needs. Noon tomorrow, Dr. Bill O'Brien. And just look at that. Dr. Bill is going to become literally the point of the spear of the Head On Radio Network. 5 days a week from noon until 10 p.m., we will be producing the most conversation-oriented progressive talk in the world. Dr. Bill will be with us on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Repeat performances on Mondays and Fridays. Maybe just for starts. We don't know. But I think you're going to be pleased and surprised, not surprised. You've come to expect good conversation from the Head On Radio Network. So that all begins tomorrow. And of course, just to review the lineup: Dr. Bill, Mark Levine, Guy James, Bruce Birch, me. More to come beyond that. You know, just so you'll know, we're not playing here. We fully intend, as our goal, to be producing 24 hours a day of progressive conversation 7 days a week. By next year. By next year. That's where the Head On Radio Network is headed. And I'm glad to have you along. Please, it grows with you. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. Tell the cat. And we'll you'll grow with us. Now, coming up later in here in just a little bit, we hope. I've been very presently a conversation with a new friend, Will Kimbrough. I played some of his music for you last week from his new release, Americanitis. You can get it at willkimbrough.com. That's willkimbrough, willkimbrough.com. And I think it's brilliant music, and it speaks. Lord, it speaks. So that is that's on the plate for this evening, as well as a look at the news and all the cussing and discussing of an entire day's worth of Republican screw ups. And just a mention, we had a blast yesterday, all of us who showed up at the big three-county Democratic Party picnic, party at Wayne's Place. Huge turnout, great conversations with local political leaders. Excellent remarks by our Congressman Nick Rahal, who went so far as to describe Republicans as, that's right, evil. When was the last time you heard a congressman call a Republican evil? Time for, John McCain talks, and I got straight talk, and then he runs off and bows and scrapes and kowtows at Jerry Falwell University. The heck with John McCain. There was some straight talk yesterday. And it is much needed, because we have got to start, as the saying goes, giving the devil his due. And frankly, a party that stands idly by while thousands or hundreds of thousands are slaughtered, what else are you going to call them but evil? But, that's me. So we'll take a break and come back. You know the phone numbers, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The peace we'll make when someday we walk like him. God forgive our war in vain. Jesus tried to give us sight, for to see wrong from right. Jesus tried, but Jesus failed. God forgive our war in vain. Bless the poorest of the poor, sea to sea and door to door. Let the millionaires atone. God forgive our war in vain. God forgive our war and way, how we wander, how we stray.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
I got a brand new song, I'm gonna sing it out loud. And I won't be afraid, and I won't be proud. And I won't be ashamed about singing out loud about peace in the land and a brand new song. I got brand new eyes, seeing everything clear. And I'm still not afraid of the things I hold dear. And I'm still not ashamed about singing out loud about peace in the land and my love for my baby.
The name of that tune, I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way. The name of that tune is Brand New Song. It's one of, I think, 17 or so clips, cuts, on the new Will Kimbrough album, Americanitis. And I'm very, tongue-tied. I'm very proud and very pleased to have Will Kimbrough join us right now. Will, are you there?
I'm here.
Thanks, first of all, for taking time to chat with us this evening, Will. This is a heck of an album, Americanitis. It's brand new out, is it not?
Yes, it is. It came out Tuesday, July 25th.
Well, I was provided with a few cuts from it, and have since gone on to see about getting the whole thing, because this is just amazing music. Obviously, you're coming from a very southern perspective. You're a southern boy, right?
I'm from Mobile, Alabama, and I live in Nashville now, so I've only made it almost to this Mason-Dixon line, although I've been past it many times.
And out beyond it, too. It's my understanding you're getting ready to go on tour?
Yeah. I had 5 weeks at home, which is the longest I've been off tour in a long time, and we've been working on getting this record out and getting it all ready to go, and now I'm heading out to the Mountain West.
Are you
I'm heading for Utah and Colorado, and gosh, let me look at my schedule and I'll give you a quick idea of where all we're headed.
we've got a lot of listeners out on the out in that direction. So,
well, I'll be in, and you can, my website's willkimbrough.com. That's KIMBROUGH.com. willkimbrough.com. And there's a tour dates page. I have a MySpace site. If you search me and the music part of MySpace, it comes up. Tour dates are there. I'll be in Salt Lake City. I'll be in Idaho. I'll be in Reno. Be in Northern California. Back in Colorado.
Now, do you?
Mexico, and then I'll be in New York, New Jersey, Philly.
Lots of opportunities then.
Connecticut, back to California, Oregon, Tennessee, North Carolina.
Oh wow!
Mississippi, Maryland, Ohio, Kentucky, North Carolina, Louisiana, Birmingham. Back to Mississippi. Back to Pennsylvania. Back to Virginia.
So
back to North Carolina, back to Georgia, and then that's it's like November 11th.
That's till November. So what? You're, is this a marathon? You're just playing nonstop 24 hours a day?
A lot of, trying to get that cheap Southwest flight out to some region. And, doing as many dates as I can.
For folks that may not be familiar with you, Will, apart from your solo career, what else do you do?
I produce records. I write songs. Play guitar on other people's records, and I sometimes play lead guitar in Rodney Crowell's band.
Wow!
And I'm a father of two and a husband, and I like to walk my dog.
What kind of dog?
Oh, he's a mutt.
Best kind.
Yep.
Well, with regard to the American Itis album. There's a lot of straight talk on there, Will. You don't hide behind anything when you suggest that this nation is going in the wrong direction. What was the genesis of all this?
Well, the genesis of it was trying to. I've always been trying to write songs that addressed. That address topical issues, and it's easy to call it political songs.
I think that cheapens the process a little bit, frankly.
I keep calling it, and this is just a way to avoid feeling like just lumping it in with. But it is a political record. It's very much so. Sorry for all the dead air.
That's okay.
Of it was reacting to events this time. I've been trying to figure out a way to voice, I think my feelings this time were so strong. I felt a real sense of disappointment and despair when we went into Iraq. I felt like it was. I don't know what it would have been if they had found weapons of mass destruction, what my feelings would have been, but pretty soon they decided that they hadn't. And I feel like rushing to war is always the wrong idea. And it's my belief that all wars are always a humanitarian disaster. The reason I say that is the other day they declared that Israel, Syria, Lebanon situation that's going on now is a humanitarian disaster. And I was like, yeah,
surprised.
When we bombed Baghdad, I know Americans were thirsty for retribution for 9/11, and in a sense, there was a feeling that I felt. And someone correct me if I'm wrong. I felt there was a bit of a general sense because I talked to people where where I was around, and I felt a sense of. I said, Iraqis didn't perpetrate 9/11, and there were some people that said it doesn't matter. Need to go in anyway. And Saddam Hussein was a monster, but anyway, and there were a lot of all the corporate scandals of the last few years moved me to write some songs.
Oh,
9/11 moved me, and the reaction to 9/11 moved me. There's a song called Pride. I don't know if you've heard that.
Yes,
one.
Yes, I have.
It's about. It's just an observation and the way a writer's mind works or mine works. Anyway, I saw a car with one of those Christian fish symbols on it, and right next to it, it had a Power of Pride sticker. And then later, I saw another, and I saw a few more, and it moved me to think, how would someone who is is Christianity is important enough to them to actually put something on their a symbol on their car.
Well, I was
to actually want to think that there's a power in being proud of who you are because of where you were born.
Well, not just that. The Christian fish next to that sticker is a profound dichotomy too, Will, because.
And I have to say, from a literary standpoint, as a writer, you're thankful for that. You're like, wow, thanks for giving me that inspiration, because it's like the line in the Don Henley song, I saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a 80s statement of baby boomers growing up.
A triggering moment.
This old guy is an old hippie.
Yeah. But the last time I read the book that the folks with the fish on their cars claimed to involve themselves with, it said pride goeth before a fall.
Right. And that's why I thought it was such a heavy thing to, you know. I believe I know countries have to have, at least in the world we live in now, have to have a military to protect themselves. But when we use it to promote an ideology and to try to, you know, go in with an army and tell people that we're going to set them free, I don't think it ever has worked. I have yet to see the history that shows that it works.
Well, you and I were probably a little too young for Vietnam, but that's an abject lesson in that.
Right. So, and the other thing was, I was moved by, at the same time, the thing I remember most about 9/11, other than the events of 9/11, was I was riding. I had to go to a show, and it was so early in the morning when I had to leave because I had to drive 8 hours. That I couldn't get in touch with anyone to find out if it was canceled or not because the towers had just come down. And so I said, I'm going to drive. I had to drive to Jackson, Mississippi from Nashville, which is 400 miles. So I thought I'd drive to Memphis. When I get to Memphis, I'm going to stop and call the promoter and say, should I just turn around and go home? So I'm driving down I-40 from Nashville to Memphis, and there's no cars on the highway, no planes in the sky. The radio's on fire with news and conjecture and possibilities and people talking. And at one point I got a Christian station was the only thing I could pick up in this little deserted stretch of highway where there was like a Christian talk station. And the first caller that called in had this deep southern accent, and he said, well, what I'm trying to figure out is how to find it in my heart to forgive these people, because that's what we're supposed to do as Christians. And I thought, and I was just, I had to pull over and weep a little bit. And really tears of joy to think that there's someone out there that really gets it. And I'm not trying to push some kind of religious agenda.
No, I understand.
I'm just saying that I grew up in the Christian church, and I understand what I understood Jesus was trying to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things. And then here's somebody that gets it. This is a thick southern accent guy from Middle Tennessee that's listening to a Christian talk station that actually says, the first thing we have to do is try to forgive these people.
That didn't last, though, did it?
No, it didn't. And the other thing, and I mean, I'm not here to bash America, and because this is my home, and I have traveled every inch of this country except for Hawaii. I've been to every state. I've played in every state except for Hawaii. I have traveled it. I've hiked in the mountains, in the Smokies, and the Rockies, and I love and people as individuals all over the world, especially Americans, good, open, wonderful, friendly, helpful people who would help their neighbor or a stranger if it comes down to it. But sometimes people get grouped in together, and sometimes people get lied to by people who are in power who have been corrupted by too much power. And the other thing I was trying to get across, and I never did quite get this song written, and my one regret is I wanted to say we all need to look at ourselves and say, how much? What's my price? At what point would I sell out? You know, I'm making this album about corruption and people who have too much power and the trying to remind people that peace is better than war, and war is, and hate is worse, and love is better than hate. But I also wanted to try to get across that I don't think anyone's above the temptation, saying, well, if I just take this payoff now, then I'll be set for life, and then I can go back to doing good thing.
But it's not always somebody walking along with a check. I mean, the sellout can come in six dozen different ways, can't it, Will?
Right. It's much more subtle. And I was reacting to Enron and the other, you know, corporate scandals because it seemed like the guys at the top went on trial last. And it was probably because they had the most powerful lawyers and they were able to keep the appeal, you know, keep getting the trial dates put off.
Mm-hmm.
And so mainly this is just a reminder because we always can be reminded of this. I think writing songs about war, anti-war songs, are timeless because, unfortunately, we've always been in war. Human beings have been for a long time. But then the other thing was to say that, you know, we're all susceptible to that temptation. And like, I think you just put it a good way. It's sometimes much often and almost always more subtle than we think. And I just think that we're spending our grandchildren's inheritance when we could be figuring out what's the next energy source after oil goes away and how we're going to get around. Like, we could be building. I remember having an argument about going into Iraq, and I said we should be building passenger trains in the medians of the interstates a little bit at a time until the nation has a rail service. And my friend said that trains cost $10 million a mile. We're in war that costs billions of dollars, billions a week.
A day.
A day, yeah, $1 billion a day. So we can think that, well, we could have built 100 miles of track every day. And we've been over there for quite a long time. So think about things like that. I just want to say that peace is better than war and love is better than hate. And I know that it's a given, but I think sometimes it's good to remind, good to say. And it feels good to say it.
It does feel good. Now, you were talking about going out on tour starting tomorrow. But you're also, you've also started some performances based on the release of Americanitis, Will. What kind of a response are you getting? Is there a hunger out there for
really
this kind
great.
Of music?
I mean, I played in Moorhead, Kentucky the other night, which is Eastern Kentucky, which you'd think could be the right-hand side of the buckle on the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And although, you know, it was a public radio show, for syndicated show, Americana Crossroads is what it's called. The response was really good, and the response to the song Pride has been really surprising. I think people are kind of moved by that. And one of the things I always say about it, and this is true, that when I was talking to a trusted old friend who I really respect musically, he's a producer and an engineer and a studio owner in Nashville, and he's always done this great work with such integrity. And I asked him, I said, what do you think about somebody making a record that sort of has a political point of view? And he said, it's great, as long as you don't get preachy. And so I wrote a sermon, and I know I keep making these religious references.
No, it's Will. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, so yeah, I understand.
William Faulkner called the South a place with a Christ haunted landscape, and I think that's true.
Very much so.
And it is haunted in both ways that it could be haunted in a good and a bit haunted in that it's visited by that spirit, and there's all the great gospel music and great Pentecostal preaching that fed rock and roll and blues as we know it.
Yeah.
There's all that devil's music that goes along with the Lord's music that it made such great. I mean, I've been listening to so much early blues from the 20s and 30s, and those people were told they were making the devil's music.
And those influences certainly come out very clear on Americanitis. Let me, you're in Nashville, Will.
Yeah.
You were talking about, you know, what would it be like? There was a little bit of irony for me in hearing you asking your trusted friend, how would it be to do a political album? You know, that's the way we are on the progressive side of things, because the fact of the matter is, so-called mainstream country music has been politicized, at least in my humble opinion, politicized all to the dickens. I mean, when you've got Toby Keith out there talking about putting the points of a boot in certain places we shouldn't talk about on the radio, how much more political can you get? I think the question might be, it's a question we on the left or the progressive side, whatever you want to call us, have asked for far too long. Is it okay for us to speak up?
Right.
And I think you're answering that very affirmatively.
I have to say, I don't think I was asking someone if it was okay. That's the only thing I wanted to make sure that I got, you know, sort of got across. is that I was running it by him, and actually I got the advice, and I kind of went contrary to it, which I'm glad that I did, which isn't to say that, you know, my friend was wrong, but that I got his opinion, and then I moved on and
Do you think that's happening more though on our side of the debate, that people are coming out and being more willing, especially south of the Mason-Dixon line? You know, this is there's a very, you know, you Delta Blues.
My parents are Yellow Dog Democrats. You know what those are?
Oh yeah, because mine are too.
So my parents, I was raised by Yellow Dog Democrats, and my mother told me. She was in town visiting for my daughter's 11th birthday this weekend, and she said that the county where my father is from, which is Clark County, which is in South Alabama.
I know it well.
They're having stickers printed up now that are a tiny blue speck in a big sea of red, and they're talking about Clark County because it's going back to being Democrat. Not that the Democratic Party is not guilty of. Of voting for Iraq too.
Oh no.
But I think that again, I've said this too. You know, I'm not just talking about the president personally, because that's like shooting ducks in a barrel right now. You know, and
yeah.
I don't want to shoot ducks in a barrel. I just, you know, the main thing is, you can generally say that when you get too much power, you get corrupt, and there needs to be somebody to check your power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have our system in America, and what we need to do, in my opinion, what I'd like to do is use it and get people a little bit excited about the power that we have protected by the Constitution still. And again, I mean, you go over the country, and when you talk to individuals, you feel like we're way more united than we are divided. But it's turned into an entertainment story, you know, infotainment. And then people think, you know, and there's also a very, very passionate, very, in my opinion, weird, like, religious right that is just, I'm endlessly puzzled by and sort of fascinated by. And, I know I'm on progressive radio and I'm probably preaching to the choir, but
I think
one of my songs says, I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong. You know, let the people marry. Tell me, why are you so worried? You know,
mm-hmm.
like, what are you so worried about? I mean, I said in my blog on my website the other day, I said, I propose a constitutional amendment to ban divorce, because the real enemy of the institution of marriage is divorce.
Right. But okay. you'll never catch the...
And we should also ban having children out of wedlock by the Constitution, because that way there wouldn't be any born out of wedlock. But see, you can't do that. And you can't stop people who love each other from being with each other. You just can't do it.
Well, that's the positive power of love.
Right. And if we could just get on the positive, and I really don't understand. I mean, if the Christian, you know, and I just don't understand people who claim to be so. I mean, I, from what I understand, that the stem cell bill that the president vetoed the other day was not talking about embryos that even had a chance at being made into babies.
No.
They were stem cells that were marked for disposal anyway. Now, he didn't say anything like, we're going to stop them from being disposed of and turn them into babies now. He just said, I vetoed this stem cell, because he knows that's a hot button with those people. And I have to say, the biggest victims of the Republicans has been the conservative Christians, because they don't ever get what they say they're going to do. And I'm glad, of course, because I'm against so many of their agendas. They just get kowtowed to during election time, and then they get blown off, because nobody's going to go for that stuff. I don't think. Not the majority of people.
They're played
Maybe
for
I
fools.
I feel like a politician speaking for the majority of people, but... I just don't believe it.
Well, you know, you're right. A lot of these people, and I'm talking about the ground level folks, they're played for well-meaning fools. You know, it was in Congress several months ago when one of the associates of Jack Abramoff testified under oath in front of Congress and referred to the Christian right as the religious wackos. I mean, this is their side. This is how they think about them.
Well, you know, one thing you have to understand, I mean, I live in Nashville, and we the Dixie Chicks are always a big story, because, you know, are you for them or are you against them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, in the press, I mean, it's ridiculous. The press sent the papers here sent reporters to their first show. Like, all the reporters got sent to the Dixie Chicks' first show to report how many people were in the stands and how it was going.
And were there any protests outside?
And let me tell you this. I was in Sweden a couple of years ago, and the promoter on the tour was Clear Channel. And they were promoting Rodney Crowell's tour, and I was the opening act for Rodney. And we had dinner the last night of the tour in Stockholm with this woman from the company. She said, oh, yeah, we're on my Clear Channel. She goes, you know, the weird thing is, this was when the old Dixie Chicks thing was going on, the whole supposed controversy.
Right.
She said, oh, yeah, they were just in Sweden, and we promoted their tour, too. So it's my belief that what Clear Channel did here was an attempt at some sort of patriotic, uber-patriotic PR coup to say, you know, ban the Dixie Chicks, and then when it was in Europe, where there was no problem with what Natalie Maine said about President Bush, they were the promoters because they were going to make money, and that is at least you can understand it in terms those guys are just pure out corporate capitalist, and all they care about is bottom line.
Sure,
they don't really have an opinion. It's kind of like they're kind of like a politician who just wants to get elected. So.
Well, it's no different than Rupert Murdoch's.
They don't have any interest in mind, and yeah. And I know, and again, I'm just a musician, so I'm just trying to get stuff off my chest. I mean, I'm a songwriter. I'm not just a musician, but
yeah. Well, I don't think there's any such thing as just a musician. So.
The response so far has been wonderful. I've gotten a lot of response from people because we were selling the record online for a few weeks before the record came out in stores. So we've had copies going out to Sweden and Ireland and England and other parts of the world, Canada, all over the U.S., and I haven't gotten any. The only response that I got that was almost negative was an old friend who read an interview that I did, and he's a businessman, and he felt slighted by something that I said about business, and I think that he heard me talking about business. I'm talking about corporate power that is, if it's unchecked, it does harm. It just does.
Well, even Adam Smith acknowledged that in The Wealth of Nations.
And this guy is a self-made man, came from nothing, has his own company now. I know the guy. And I said, he said, do you want me to feel sorry for being successful? And I said, no, I'm not talking about you. You're a self-made man. You have worked. You weren't just handed something. And you're not exploiting, as far as I know. You know, you're exploiting what you have. And so that's the only thing I've gotten, was somebody who just was, I think, made really uncomfortable by something that I was saying. And I told him, I said, that's the whole point of doing a record like this. It's for you to communicate with me or with whoever and say, well, what do you think? What do you think? We ought to be saying, what do you think? And not just yelling at each other or assuming that we are divided, because we're going to have to, I mean, Americans are going to have to deal with the aftermath of the Iraq War, if there ever even is the ability to use the word after, because it's, we're in a little, you know, the whole region's in flames.
Yeah, we started that fire. There's no getting around it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Israeli situation has been smoldering and burning off and on for, you know, 50, 60 years, but we went in and brought and said, bring it on, you know, and took it there, and we did. We did. We absolutely did. And we did it. We acted alone, and I'm kind of shocked sometimes by the attitude that, like, who cares what Europe thinks about what we do? We don't have to do what they say. And the thing that I think people say that are being naive about is that, how do you think we have such a high standard of living here besides cheap oil? We have businesses that are tied together and alliances in Europe, for better or worse. I mean, I know this is progressive radio. I'm sure people are thinking of, you know, and they're all evil, but that's not necessary. You know, that's generalizing. But the fact is we have relationships that go back 250 years with France and Germany and England.
Mm-hmm.
And this administration has wrecked that. At least, I mean, hopefully, I think it's repairable. But we don't have any credibility. I've just got back from Europe, and I do care what people think.
Well, what did you hear over there?
I don't want them to hate us, and I don't want them to think that we're a bully going around the world trying to force our political system on people, because that's, well, they think the Bush administration is crazy. I met one guy in Ireland who I think was just drunk and wanted to start a fight.
No, not there.
Huh?
Not there, not in Ireland.
Well, there was, yeah, right. But I mean, but everybody else, I'm telling you, man, I went to Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, all over the country. And everybody was just like, you know, they want to know, do you like Bush? And they had this look on their face like they've just asked you if you'd like to step in dog poop. You know, and if you say yes, then they're saying, oh, you like to step in dog poop. Okay. I mean, and again, I don't make my decisions based on that, but I do have to take it in.
Sure.
I do have to roll it around on my tongue and see what it tastes like. And it doesn't taste good. It doesn't feel good. Because I have been to those countries and interacted with people at shows and talked to people before and after, hung out in cities and hung towns. And I think that peace is better than war, and love is better than hate.
And you know, American music is
I love it.
Yeah, it's the greatest outreach that this nation has, and yet we seem more bent on exporting bombs than we do on music.
Well, the good news is there's hundreds of independent musicians like myself and a lot of friends of mine in Nashville that go over there all the time, and they're doing their own. And I'll tell you this, no matter what people think of American government and American policies and politics, they still love the music, and they don't take it out on the musicians. And for the most part, the mainstream country acts just don't even go. They don't. They just said it's not really a market for them.
Yeah.
So,
I can.
Whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is politicized. I don't really live in that music row, commercial country world of Nashville. But I actually wrote a song that Jimmy Buffett recorded as a duet with Toby Keith.
Oh, I'm a parrot head. Tell me.
It's a song called Piece of Work. It's on
Sure.
License to Chill. And so my interesting thing about Toby Keith is that he says he's a Democrat, but I think he's just an old school, like, hawk.
From Oklahoma, right?
Yeah.
Well, you get that out there.
Yeah.
But one of the things that like I said really impresses me about what you've done, Will, is let me back up a minute.
Yeah.
I
like to be talking about music too, because you know, but you got me going there.
That's okay. I love this kind of conversation. It's what this network specializes in. But I'm convinced that the worst nightmare of the Republican Party right now is people of southern heritage and southern roots and southern sensibilities beginning to speak openly against their policies. And I think music like yours is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Because it fits into an archetype with which Southerners are accustomed, and it's one of the things that makes me really proud of Howard Dean is his unwillingness to simply concede the South and all the progressives and all the liberals and all the decent people there to a Republican way of life. If anybody in this nation has been uniformly more abused geographically, not racially, but geographically, it's the South.
Yeah.
And it's more of the same, more of the same, more of the same. I happen to be in Alabama. You're from Mobile. I'm from 350 miles due north. I'm from the Shoals. And I was there during the election campaign leading up to the June 6th primary. And the Democrats, the Republicans, I swear if there had been communists on the ballot, they would have talked about their conservative Alabama family values.
Right.
And that conservatism is all a fraud, frankly, because it doesn't mean what we think it means.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you write a song like I Lie, the people who support that so-called conservatism are the people you're singing about in I Lie.
Yeah.
The people who will gladly, you know, take, steal, do whatever they can because they can get away with it, and the only reason they can get away with it is because they're able to look at people and say, yeah, but we're conservative.
Yeah.
So, you know, when a voice like yours comes out And there are others, but I was blown away by the willingness that you show in your music to come right out and say it. You know, it's not metaphorical. It's not nobody's got to play the record backwards to get the message.
Well, I mean, the songs really came from an emotional place, and there's a song called Less Polite, and it came from the 2004 presidential election, which I was raised in the deep south of Mobile. It's way down in the Gulf Coast. It's very polite, old south kind of place where, you know, bless your heart is code for screw you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, you know, polite society in a sense, in a way that's different from, say, you know, Newark, New Jersey, on the street where you bump into somebody and you kind of just bump and walk by. You know, Mobile, you might stop and say you're sorry and tell somebody a story, which doesn't make it better. That's just the way it is.
Right.
But I was thinking, I've been talking to people about the election, and I just said, I've got to learn to be less polite. Got to start just telling people, I think that I'm, you know, don't mean to offend you, but I think you're dead wrong about this, and let me tell you why. And why I worry when I talk to you about this, because I want to just tell you something. And it's kind of a naive song, and I left it the way I wrote it, straight out of my passion of the moment. You know, it says the president's a fool. You know, it says I'm fed up with the Christian wrong. It says I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. All very naive things, kind of all very straightforward things, and it's one of the songs people are reacting to because it's like a pop song. It's like a Beatle-y pop song, but it says all these things, but it's really fun to listen to. And that was part of my intention, was to give them, you know, some sugar with the medicine.
Does it look like you're going to get that you're going to get serious airplay out of?
Well, on Americana Radio, which is small, but it's my format right now.
Mm-hmm.
The one I can compete in, because you know, regular pop radio, I don't have the million of dollars to, you know.
And I don't think you want to be segued into Britney or anything like that right now.
Right, but I mean, on Americana Radio last week, I was second most added.
Wow.
And I had more ads than another artist who's on a major label, so I don't want to mention because.
I understand.
Good guy and a good friend, and you know, and but anyway, there's some good work out there too. But so in other words, I'm getting about as more than I expected. I'm getting, and I'm on the top 40 charts this week on that chart. I'm number 35. I debuted at 35. So that's pretty good. I'm a little bitty artist with a little bitty record label. But we're doing everything we can to sort of, you know, get the record out to people. I really, you know, I feel strongly about it, and I feel good singing the songs for people, and they're really responding well to it.
And you're free to do what you want to do because of the position that you choose.
Well, I'm the record company, and it does actually, my records do go through Sony BMG distribution system. So actually, in the stores, it's getting to the stores via this, you know, sort of corporate chain, you know, of distribution. But it's a good. They have big trucks that they can put CDs in, so they get to the stores, you know.
Well,
I'm the record label. I'm very.
You can't beat being your own boss.
Well, because you get to. There was nobody to temper this, you know. Once it was accepted into that distribution chain, nobody ever came back and said anything because it's my record.
Right, and you weren't.
They knew there were stores that would order them, so they took it into their system. I mean, you know, that part of the business end of things is still, you know, it doesn't matter what, you know.
Yeah, but nobody subjected you to focus group studies or.
Scan or green scan, you know, their money is still green to a record store, so.
Well, exactly, and of course you mentioned your lovely family there, and that's got to play a big part in this because you're out on the road. I know you're going to miss your wife and kids and the dog.
Yeah.
But
we take the perks together as much as we can, and you know, we try to get the family out on the road to cool places. My wife just joined me in Ireland.
Oh wow!
She's joining me in Southern California coming up soon, and so we try to you know. Do it as much as we can, and my wife and I work together running the label. So we
it's
definitely a labor of love. You know, it's a lot of work, and it's fun work. So
Well, the first person you spoke to here was my wife, Agnes, and I can certainly identify with what you're talking about there. With regard to your music, is there do you have any like sample downloads or anything that folks can check out before buying the album? Anything like that?
Well, there's sound samples up on MySpace. There's also a podcast out right now on iTunes. If people get on there, and you can, if people are savvy with podcasts, they go to iTunes, click on podcasts, and then go to the search window and type in Will Kimbrough, and there's one called Americanitis Podcast Number 1, and it's only about 10 minutes long, but it has a good third of the songs, about a minute of each song in there. You know, like a fade in and fade out and sort of a little talk from me. And I'm planning to do some more to where all the songs are up in that way. That's completely free. My website doesn't support sound bites right now.
Okay. But you can order Americanitis directly through your website, correct?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
If you go to my website and go to the merchandise page, then there's also a song-by-song commentary on the merch page. Like if you go down, somewhere on my page, there's a song-by-song commentary on the record. Where did it go?
Story of my life. I don't do web design, and it's magic to me.
But I do work on this website a whole lot, so it's
Well, I noticed your blog postings, and I appreciate you putting up the interview that you were going to be joining us. Will,
hold on. Now there are some song samples. Yes, you can listen to stuff.
Cool.
Yes, on my website. I'm sorry, I had to go onto my website and make sure that it was. Although they're not Americanitis song samples aren't up there yet.
Okay. Well, I don't want to keep you any longer. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I hope perhaps we can chat again sometime.
Me too.
Especially, next album release if you just get a bee under your bonnet, that'll be fine too. And I wish you the very best with the sales of the album.
Where are you guys located?
We're in West Virginia.
Okay.
Cool. And in fact, I'm going to check the tour schedule and see if you're going to get anywhere near here. I'd love to drop in and see the show.
Well, I will ultimately. It may not be on these tour dates right now, but I do tend to cover the whole country in my travels. So maybe I'll do Mountain Stage,
That would be wonderful. What a great show that is.
I know those guys, and they know me, so we'll see.
Okay, well, wonderful. Will, travel safely, and our best to your family, please. And again, what a wonderful, wonderful record you've made.
Thank you.
Have a great evening.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. Will Kimbrough, the new album is Americanitis. As you heard, you can order it at his website, willkimbrough.com. That's KIMBROUGH. And there's an iTunes link at whiterosesociety.org. You can check out his music there. I think it's really important to celebrate and to support artists like Will. Because frankly, it takes guts to go out and say what Will has said in no uncertain terms. And, I'm proud to have had the conversation with him. When we come back, we'll crank up the program. We'll look in some other directions. Let's go out with another one of Will's tunes. Could we, dear? What do we have here? Less Polite. Kind of an art, could be kind of an anthem for what we're doing here, too, couldn't it? This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. Bye.
This is a Quality News Network. Israel is rejecting calls for a ceasefire after yesterday's airstrike, which killed 60 civilians, many of them women and children. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says Hezbollah militants must first release the two Israeli soldiers they've been holding captive for 3 weeks. CNN now reports that Israeli officials have approved broadening the country's offensive. Thousands of residents in southern Lebanon took advantage of a brief lull in strikes to flee north. Israel had agreed to a 48-hour halt in its campaign, but reserved the right to strike targets that pose an immediate threat. Today, Israel hit a Lebanese military truck that the army mistakenly believed was carrying militants, killing one soldier. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinian militants are vowing revenge for yesterday's attack. And Syria's prime minister told his country's military today to be prepared for action. In Washington, President Bush says the U.S. is working toward a sustainable ceasefire. Mr. Bush will meet with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice tonight. At the United Nations, the Security Council has indefinitely postponed a meeting to set up a new international peacekeeping force in the area. The Council is instead extending its current peacekeeping mission for 1 month. In Baghdad today, gunmen kidnapped at least 26 people, while at least 27 others were either killed or found dead. Democratic leaders in Congress are now calling for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq by the end of the year. In New Orleans today, an appellate court debated whether former Congressman Tom DeLay's name should remain on the Texas ballot. The court indicated that the decision would depend on whether it could be proven that he moved to Virginia, but did not issue a formal ruling. Republicans want to replace his name with another candidate, but Democrats want DeLay's name to stay. In Mexico City, supporters of Mexican presidential candidate Andrés Manuel López Obrador are causing chaos in the business district. They're staging a massive sit-in to protest last month's presidential election, which they say was rigged. And in Russia, experts are backing off a claim that a huge oil spill could prompt an environmental disaster. The spill is reportedly smaller than initially believed, and Russian officials say it was cleaned up over the weekend. The heat wave that crippled California last week has moved on to the Midwest and Plains states, where temperatures were expected to hit at least 100 degrees today. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The FDA is considering a proposal to allow the morning-after pill to be sold over-the-counter to adult women. Bar Pharmaceuticals manufactures a pill called Plan B. Microsoft has handed over more paperwork to the European Union concerning a 2001 antitrust order. Regulators have not decided whether to levy more fines in addition to the $357 million fine imposed earlier this month. Verizon Wireless is eliminating its $15 monthly fee for its music download service. That coincides with the launch of its new cell phone, Chocolate, which features an iPod-like click wheel and memory card that can hold up to 1,000 songs. Three billionaires, including Hollywood mogul David Geffen, have expressed interest in buying the Los Angeles Times, but the paper's owner, the Tribune Company, has reportedly said it's not interested. Defense contractor Northrop Grumman has reportedly put its navigation systems unit up for sale. The Wall Street Journal says it could get as much as $1 billion. A recent study shows that more and more Americans are working on their vacations. 43% say they continue at least some of their work-related duties while on break. That's up from 23% a decade ago. Light sweet crude settled at $74.40 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 34 points, NASDAQ down 3, S&P 500 down 2. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
What we had in the last hour was the very definition of conversation radio. And, you know, Will Kimbrough, for me, is, how best to put this. You know, when you can always tell that you've sort of gotten under the fingernails of the right wingers when an issue comes along and say, well, what makes a performer think they know anything about blah, 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 the war in Iraq? Remember how they attacked Barbara Streisand, Janine Garofalo, you know, various, right. Well, you know what? We are all Americans. And nobody's voice deserves to be discounted by simply by virtue of what you do for a living. Will Kimbrough is obviously a highly intelligent man, and puts that passion and that intelligence to work in his music. And you know what? His voice is valid. You give me a few more Will Kimbroughs in the world, and Iraq doesn't happen. Because those are voices that can get out. And that's what scares the right wing so much. The wrong wing. The religious wrong, as he refers to it. I enjoyed the conversation greatly. Let's go to the phones. We are joined by our good new friend, Roy from Texas. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
How are you?
Well, I'm good. How about you?
I tell you, if I was any better, I'd be in Florida. I'd be on the water slide somewhere around Orlando.
Okay.
Who am I lying to? I'd be on the back porch with a big old ice cold PBR, or maybe a long neck of Lone Star.
Well, that'd be better than the water slide in Florida.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, how's the bushes today?
For me to say that I'm dismayed with these people would be unfair. I live in a constant state of despair and dismay with these freaks. But, you know, every time it seems like they've gotten to the point where they can't get any worse, and I say, you know, I'll say that, boy, you know, they can't get any worse than this. They up the ante. You know, how can you sit by and watch what's going on in Lebanon and Israel and say, well, we're gonna fire up the barbecue and have a party.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. They're fiddling while Rome burns, aren't they?
That's the way I see it. It is just unbelievable.
Did you catch where the Lebanese told Condi, don't come here?
Yeah.
And then immediately thereafter she had to say, well, you know, I have decided not to go to Beirut. It was my decision. It's not because they told me I wasn't welcome there.
Yeah, and then she tried to spin that it was just great that she got a 48-hour ceasefire out of them.
That didn't turn out to be a ceasefire.
No. And you knew it, I knew it, just the minute that they said that they were going to be a ceasefire, I knew it wasn't going to happen.
No.
And, but Lord have mercy, did you happen to see Meet the Press yesterday?
I'm afraid I missed it because I was politically engaged, Roy.
Okay.
Went to a big picnic. What went down?
Oh my Lord! Russert had Tom Friedman on.
Oh yuck!
Friedman, I mean, he was just he was full of it, and but I mean everything was just right to the point. He said Bush is the most hated person around the world, in the world. He's radioactive, and just on and on and on. And this morning, we had to go to Dallas today and see my doctor. But anyhow, before we left, I had Imus on the and I'm not an Amos fan, but
right.
I can stand to watch him every so often. But this morning he had John Kerry on, and I'll be damned if he didn't have John Kerry to read what most of Friedman was saying yesterday about the radioactive and everything else.
He had Kerry read it?
He had him to read it.
And Kerry went along willingly?
He read it. You could tell he was laughing out his butt.
George Bush is radioactive. Lord God, Billy Bob. What's wrong with playing the sound bite of Friedman saying it himself?
Well, I have no idea, but he had John Kerry to read it.
And amazing.
He happily did.
That's amazing. I mean, of course, you know, John Kerry came out with his health care plan today.
I haven't seen anything. I just recently had a belly button repair and had to go see my doctor about that, and everything going great. So I haven't seen anything. I did see the Dallas Baker this morning, and just a little nothing else.
Well, you know, I just saw this story not too long before I went on the air, Roy, and, you know, Southerners, Southwestern are like you, and Southerners like us, and we understand, and other people do, too, but we do understand the meaning of the phrase, closing the door after the horses is gone.
You know it, yeah.
You know, here it is. It's the last day of July, 2006, and John Kerry has now come out with his 2004 health care plan. You know, that stuff just drives me nuts, Roy.
Well, I understand. I understand.
But, you know, there's hope. You know, folks are standing up. Like in the conversation there with Will Kimbrough, I mentioned Howard Dean's 50-state strategy. I am going to be excited when we see this take shape even more, and we get to watch the Democratic Party march into Mississippi and Alabama and Texas and Arkansas and Louisiana and start confronting these monsters with their own failures.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's where and you can tell me if I'm wrong, Roy, but that's where the steamroller got going.
You're right, and but, you know, like the last time we talked, those idiots, they can't admit that they were wrong, and they'd rather just not say anything, and they don't want to listen to the papers. Why, my Lord, they'd call all the media commies or something else.
Liberals.
Yeah, and it's just unbelievable. But I just don't understand it. But they cannot stand to hear anything about their Bush boy.
Well, but do you think it's going to stay that way, Roy?
No. I think in time, I really don't know how. I don't know how I answered that real quick. Said no. But I really don't know what it's going to take to wake them up. I really don't.
$4 a gallon gas?
Well, you'd think it.
Five?
You'd have thought $3 a gallon gas would, and then, you know, most of them have sense enough to read the headlines on the paper when it says Exxon made another record profit this past quarter and have made over $100 billion in a year. They ought to have sense enough to read that.
Well, there you go, assuming they're reading, but they're not. I mean, you got it. That's the one scary thing out of all this. You know, we do this at the Head On Radio Network, Roy, as an encouragement toward dialogue and conversation. That's not what you get with Flimball and Hannity and that bunch of gangsters.
No.
You said you'd think they would see when they read. There's, you know, that last little hardcore cancerous knot of, you know, 20-25% of people who still think that, you know, if they saw a video of George Bush drowning kittens, they'd swear it was a baptizing.
Oh.
They don't read. They listen to Flimball. They get told what they're supposed to hear, and they shut up and march on their orders.
Yeah. Well, the other day, I read an op-ed in the New York Times, and O'Reilly, or O'Liar is what I call him.
Yeah.
He said, oh, it's too depressing to show Iraq in the summertime. People are wanting to have fun, go on vacation, go swimming. It's too depressing to show Iraq.
Well, but it's been depressing since it started.
Do what?
It's been depressing since it started.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the only person it's depressing to is you know, GW. Lord God.
But then in today's New York paper, that's when I quote the New York Times quite a bit. I subscribe to it online. That's the best $7.95 I spend every month. But I, first thing I do when I log on in the mornings, I go to the New York Times, read the paper. And today they're talking about comparing Israel, their skirmish over there, or whatever you want to call it, with against Lebanon, against the Hezbollah, as they couldn't have done it any more of a carbon copy of Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld.
Well, and it's been, see, that's the thing, Roy. It's been a disease that has been, that's very contagious around the world. Our good friend John Fox down in Sydney, Australia, says that it, that the government down there is a carbon copy of George Bush. Tony Blair's running around yapping like a little yippy dog, being and him supposed to be at least a pseudo liberal in the UK. Of course, he's not.
Right.
You know, we've got friends who call in from there and give us the straight skinny on it. But it has been contagious around the world. Silvio Berlusconi in Italy was as creepy and nasty and fascistly conservative as George Bush.
Yeah.
So it's hardly a surprise to find out that something got into the water in Tel Aviv too.
You're right.
Because you know you got to remember, what was it, 2-3 years ago? You know, it all runs together after a while, Roy.
Yep.
George Bush stood there in Jerusalem. Was it Jerusalem? Maybe it was Tel Aviv. But he sat there and he looked a reporter in the eye and said, "God told me to attack Afghanistan."
Oh yeah.
And God told me to attack Iraq. Anybody else on planet Earth starts talking about what God's telling them to do, we give them medicine and a nice soft room. It's amazing. Well, Roy, you doing okay after the surgery?
Doing great. Doing great. The doctor told me today I could go back to doing anything I wanted to do. Just don't lift a whole lot.
Did you ask him if you'd be able to play piano after the surgery?
Do what?
Did you ask him if you'd be able to play piano after the surgery? That's what I always like to ask the doc. Will I be able to play piano? He says, well, I don't see why not. Great, I never could before.
Okay. But anyhow, doctor's a lady surgeon, and she just told me that you're doing perfect, and gonna leave the stitches in. They'll just dissolve on their own in 6 to 8 weeks, and do your normal duties. Just don't lift a whole lot. Use common sense, and be careful. Call me if you need me.
Well, you do that, Roy.
I'm one of them that won't schedule another appointment every 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Roy, hang in there. Do be careful. Don't lift anything too heavy. And I look forward to talking to you the next time, all right?
Oh, I will.
All right.
I'll call you.
Hey to everybody down there.
Good luck.
Bye now. That's our good friend Roy from Texas. Let's, shall we keep it rolling? Yeah, David has been holding. David, welcome to the program. Hope your weekend was good.
It was all right. That was a great interview you had with Will Kimbrough. I've never heard of that artist, and I intend to check him out. He said some really relative, important things, and yeah, he's pretty insightful. And just for everybody who wants to check out Sound Clips, the best place to go really is to go to Amazon, and I checked out all his albums except Americanitis have all the clips for all the songs.
Oh, so, wow.
Check out Amazon, and you'll see that you can listen to every single song for about, like, 45 seconds each.
Well, I tell you what, the clips that were provided to me, this is I was little hair stood up on the back of my neck, David. I mean, to hear this kind of music, and you know, you kind of look up and go, wow, where's that been? And, but you're so glad to hear it happening.
Well, he seems like he's going in a direction of the singer-songwriter type, troubadour type fashion of bringing vivid stories back to songs and important messages and just basically going, pun intended, head on.
Yeah, that's why we named it this.
Sometimes
we're going to trademark it one of these days and start charging people for using the phrase.
Sometimes you just can't avoid it. I want to talk about two things. I was going to talk about bootlegger ideologues, but, you know, two events happened. Of course, the one Sunday, and then the one that I don't know if you saw it, was the C-SPAN 9/11.
I did see it.
First thing I want to say is I want to offer some criticism.
Okay.
Spearheading Alex Jones.
I know.
To hawk DVDs, to basically just say, this is the truth, this is how it is, and I'm sorry if you don't like it, left-wingers. I mean, that was just ridiculous on the face. The other thing that really kind of annoyed me was Professor Fetzer. He's part of a movement called Scholars for Truth.
Yes.
But when he starts talking, he starts getting fanatical if you don't agree with him.
I noticed that as well.
And I started thinking, how are we going to have a significant movement on this? The only one that really has sense to me, or two of them, even though he was a self-promoter, was the Bob Bowman guy. And Stephen Jones. Stephen Jones was knocking out of the park, as far as I'm concerned. There were so many.
Well, there's the thing that I took away from the whole affair, David, was something that I have maintained for a long time, and that is, I will not sit here and say with absolute certainty that A, B, C, or D happened. Okay, because I'm enough of a skeptic that until I've reviewed it, I'm not inclined to get on the bandwagon. But what I can say with absolute certainty is they have created reasonable doubt.
I agree with you. And I think people like, for example, another person to me that's more important than Alex Jones isn't a showman or isn't a shameless doom merchant is Jimmy Walter. He's putting his own money up, and he's getting information through the Freedom of Information Act. I tip his hat to that.
Yeah. The other side of this, though, David, that's disturbing, and you touched on it already with Fetzer. And I don't want to get emails. Well, you know, you're not a true believer, and your eyes are, you know, you've still got the wool over your eyes. I'm not buying anything the government says anymore. Okay, the Warren Commission got me started, and this has just pushed me over the edge. But there is an element, and I think it detracts from serious consideration of the issues surrounding 9/11. There is an element in the movement, and the fact that I use the movement should tell us something. There is a cultish quality to it.
Oh, they want us. I mean, you have to understand that in some ways this is the same like the rapture crowd. And don't get offended, people, but this is truth, because the rapture crowd makes lots and lots of money off this. If it doesn't come, this business is over, people. And if the 9/11 truth moment, the moment of the shining light doesn't come, all these books, all of this thing, and you heard what that guy said, one of the persons said, I just want to get back to my life.
No, you don't. He doesn't want to get back to his life any more than Bev Harris wants to get back to hers.
There's another piece of work.
Well, it's, again, cultism. You know, there's a lot of people out there doing really, really hard work on electronic voting and why it's dirty and why it's wrong. And they're saying, well, you know, we need to have a paper trail, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm hardcore on that one, David, because I say there's a very simple answer. Ditch this junk, sue the companies that sold them, make them give the people's money back, and go back to paper ballots and pencils.
Exactly. I feel bad. I personally feel bad for Stephen Jones because I think he got wrapped into it, and they're selling him, and they're like, well, just do wait, Stephen. Just do wait. You're gonna have your moment. You're gonna have your moment. And you know, it seems like they're dragging him along. They put him out and they say, Stephen, what do you got for us? Like he's some dancing monkey or something.
Right.
And I thought it was good, but like I said, I thought it was interesting. I mostly got out of I thought the best representative was Stephen Jones, then comes Bob Bowman, and then Webster Tarpley, if you take out his ramblings about conspiracy this, conspiracy that. Now, I'm not saying it's because I don't believe it. I'm just saying you're representing yourself on C-SPAN.
Right, and there were certain elements of this, David, that made me feel like I needed to be hearing the X-Files theme in the background or something, you know?
Right. But then you look at it, and there's a lot of money that is at stake here.
But I want to see real science on some of these allegations, because some of this stuff really would blow doors open. The allegations that were made during the conference about thermite.
Oh, when Stephen Jones was talking about thermite, that interests me. That when he said the sulfur and the metal, I was like, okay, here we go. This is something that people can latch on to.
Yeah, get it to a metallurgist.
Right, and I'm sure he's doing that. Well, the other people, I'm sure they have good intentions in what they want to do. They're too self-opportunist. Opportunist to see that there is more to it than just selling books or DVDs or a T-shirt or a bumper sticker. I mean, that's the impression I got from it. There was a DVD mentioned every 2 minutes. And you have to...
Well, they all agreed to appear on the panel so that they could hustle their DVD. They knew the C-SPAN cameras were going to be there.
Right. See, they're I didn't even plan to talk about it, but they're bootleg ideologues too, because they rehash the same thing over and over and over again, whether it's a fourth or a fifth generation, and they're trying to make you buy it, no matter what the quality is.
You know, but I'm tired of being told that Building 7 committed suicide, or no, the camera angle was wrong, and yeah, buildings do fall down like that. I want some real, live, honest-to-God, independent scientists, you know, the kinds that walk around with pocket protectors and have paper clips and plastic tape on their glasses and, you know, the guys who live for this stuff. I want it analyzed by them, and I want it done, you know, and I want it done in such a way, David, that there can be no question of their allegiances, no question of their methodologies, no questions of their motivation. It's just science.
I'll just leave it at that. I'll just leave it at this on this that subject. They need better representatives, and I know they hate to hear that. You can't just hawk everything left and right in the middle of your presentation. I know you think it looks good.
God, David, I'm so glad you're saying this. I am so glad you are saying this, because this is one of the fundamental problems with our side of the debate. We're all begging. The fact of the matter is, and I mean, I'm not, I have said time and again on this network, you will never hear a pitch for funds on the Head On Radio Network by any of its hosts. We are going to survive, and we are going to thrive on a model that does not involve. There's too much to talk about on our programs. We can't waste 15 minutes of every show saying, we'll send you a prayer hanky or a bumper sticker or a keychain or a can cozy. We don't have that time.
You know,
and everything on the left, David, seems to be operating on that paradigm. We don't, and I don't know if it's because we don't understand marketing and all the Republican, you know, and only Republicans graduate from marketing programs in universities. I don't know if it's because of that. I don't know if it's because it's all mom and pop organizations. I simply don't know, David, but we've got to reexamine that because it takes away credibility.
I can sum it up in a sentence. The world is ours to help protect what we still have, not to sell and hawk infomercials on all of our agendas.
Yeah, because, you know, if I've got to choose between that really nifty silicone bakeware
right.
or a 9/11 video, you know, I love my kitchen. I'm likely to go with the bakeware.
Yeah, and I hate to tell these 9/11 people, but there are so many DVDs out there. You can just download and stream most of this stuff on the internet. So, I mean, save yourself some money and invest in something that's something that...
Yeah, I'll notice. Yeah, I notice that loose change is not hard to get.
No, loose change is not hard to get. And I think the guy's a really good entrepreneur, what he does. But when he comes out and he says, I didn't have any knowledge of the government, and then I found out this was true. I didn't want to believe it, and I was like, come on, man. If you study something for 2 years, if you study something for 2 years and you dedicate yourself to it, and you have an undying, unwavering, and you start to believe in what you're researching and studying, of course you're going to go in that direction. I always say this, Bob. I am always open to things, to reality, to truth. I don't shut the door on something.
Right.
I have no idea if 10 years from now I'll be a conservative. I don't know. Maybe. Who's to say?
Well, there's right now, David, you know, you got to pay your bills every month. By
right.
definition, that makes you a conservative to some degree or another. It's
right.
false dichotomies. It's a bunch of hooey.
Right, exactly.
You know, conservatives and liberals aren't, you know, this is not the Deeks versus the Sigma Chi's.
And that goes into exactly the next thing of what I want to talk about. We are conservatives. We are the conservatives on the Lebanon issue. Because some of us say, okay, go after Hezbollah, but don't commit civilian airstrikes on the same deja vu town you did, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
And my problem is as I was watching the McLaughlin Hour, I hear Tony Blankley
Freak.
Referring to Israel as a she. It just makes you sick.
Oh, that old ugly sexism has raised its head again. For some reason or another, when we talk about Israel, we have to say that she's a girl. You know, I don't know if, you know, I've seen Ehud Olmert. I'm not into his legs, you know, and you know,
right.
I think of Israel, I think of Ehud Olmert, but now all of a sudden, Israel has a right to defend herself. You know, is that because of Old Testament connotations and the fact that Israel is constantly referred to as a she and she's the bride of God or something? I don't know.
Not to be rude to Israel, but when you have everything going for yourself, you're kind of asking for her to be hated when everything's given to you. Not to say that everything is given to Israel, but when it seems like everything is given to you, could be wrong, but when it seems like your whole military is handed to you, all your weapons are handed to you, all your force, all of your political power is just handed to you on a plate, I can see why a lot of people would play the racist card after a while. They just...
Well, I'm not going to
go nuts.
I'm not going to offer any sort of apology for that kind of thing because I don't want to be in the, I don't even want to be in the same country with Mel Gibson. Unfortunately, I have to be.
Right, right.
But you know, people like Alan Dershowitz. You know, I go over, I read the Huffington Post from time to time. That poor dude has lost his mind. He posted this blog today that basically said, "Shame on those Lebanese children for getting in the way of Israel's bombs."
Do you want to know who's really scary?
Who?
I was going to talk about him today, but I'll probably do it tomorrow. Hal Lindsey. Oh my God.
Oh, Hal. So he is still alive.
The guy is still selling that snake oil, and he's selling dangerous snake oil too. Bob.
Well, you see, I was gonna take issue with you a little bit ago, David, when you say if the rapture thing doesn't happen, these guys are done. Hal Lindsey has been hustling the rapture since 1970.
That's my point. If the rapture does not. There's only a matter of time before people go, wait a minute, isn't the rapture supposed to happen now? I think eventually a crowd's going to get restless the more you ratchet it.
You know, I just want Hal Lindsey to get the Nikes in the plastic bag and whatever, and get on the spaceship behind the comet.
What he got in trouble for? This you're going to laugh at this. Do you know what he got in trouble for? He got in trouble for trying to sell shares of an oil company called Zion Oil.
Oh, no, because I've known about that for a long time. We had a guy here in West Virginia. His name was Coffindaffer,
right.
Coffindaffer.
Right.
And our state is populated. Every 5 miles on our interstates, there are three crosses on a hillside. They are known as Coffindaffer crosses. They're in Ohio, they're in Pennsylvania, they're in Kentucky, Virginia. This guy made a mission out of going up and down the interstate, and he was a multimillionaire. And when he got done putting up his Coffindaffer crosses, his next gig, he had been told by Jesus in a dream that if he put, you know, an oil derrick on top of the Dome of the Rock, that he was going to hit the biggest gusher in the Middle East. I'm not kidding. And yeah, Hal Lindsey's part of that scam.
I mean, but what Hal Lindsey's doing is something really, really sneaky. What he does now, I don't know if you've seen his op-ed columns lately, but what he does now is he takes like this special intel, like, I have my sources have told me this and da 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 da. And he puts like half of it, and then the other half is separated biblical meanderings, just basically rants.
Yeah.
And, of course, his source is a Ouija board. You understand that, right, David?
Well, he calls himself the Oracle on his webpage, so you're probably right.
You know, he sits in a cave and waits for Greek kings to come by and gives them enigmatic answers. Yeah. These people are nuts. But I do take issue with you. They've been pushing. I mean, the rapture crowd has been cruising along since something on the order of 1840, and every generation comes up, and they forget that Jesus didn't come back, and then another guy comes along, oh, he's going to be here day after tomorrow, better get ready, you know. And he said, and because of mass media now, it has become a matter of being able to hustle this poppycock on a truly, truly humongous scale. You know, it's like I said the other night with mass media. Oral Roberts realized he didn't have to take that daggum 60 or 80 by 200 canvas tent out all over creation and pass the hat. He could sit in a cool air-conditioned studio inside of his Jesus Tower in Tulsa and just and rake it in electronically.
Have you ever seen the Rapture Index?
Yes. Yes, I have. And
that page looks like a satire. It does. I thought it was a satire when I clicked on it.
Well, I know, and I'm really hoping if we can get around to designing it, our Rapture Ready real estate page can do a brisk business. I got an email from a new friend out in Arizona by the name of Jay, who told me that he's Jewish, and or I assume he or she, and that several years back was questioned as to whether or not, you know, Jews could go in the rapture. And when the response was, well, no, the question from the fundy was, well, you know, will you see to it that my stuff is given away to the poor after I rapture?
I rapture.
You know, when I go, will you take care of my stuff? So I think there's a market there for the rapturists.
No, there definitely is.
We'll mow your grass. You know, we'll make sure the taxes get paid. You know, just because you're not going to face the tribulations doesn't mean your stuff has to.
Maybe.
Am I onto something, David?
I think you're onto something. Maybe a Rapture Wall Street. They can build one in a biblical place.
Yeah, Rapture Ready Autos, Rapture Ready Real Estate. You know, with guaranteed Jewish people to look after your stuff.
No, in God's sense of humor, you know what probably would come down, Bob? Rapture Raptors.
Hey, David, so good to talk to you.
All right, man.
We'll catch you soon.
Later, Bob.
Bye now. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to anybody, but you understand that humor plays a part in this. I'm sure you have been to landoverbaptist.org. And you've seen what goes on there. That's brilliant. And you know, us liberals were sitting there going, ha, ha, ha. But actually, there's a lot of tools there that you can use against fundies. And rapture-ready real estate, I hope we can build a site like that. You know, me and that mouse in my pocket, I don't know from building websites. Are we taking a break, Agnes? Okay, we'll come back and then go to the phones. I'm Bob, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
I lie. Why? Because I can. It's the pleasure and the privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I.
Christina, I brought breakfast. Whoa, you're going out?
Already had breakfast. We've got a doctor's appointment.
The baby's sick? Why didn't you call me?
No, it's just a well baby check. We're going in for his second newborn screening today.
His what? What's a newborn screening?
Well, between 7 and 14 days, every baby needs this test done to screen for some rare diseases.
Oh, you're not sick. Hey, that baby's not sick. You can tell just by looking at him.
But you can't tell by looking. That's the point. Even healthy-looking babies can have a serious illness. Without this test, I might not know until it's too late.
Christina, you know, I think you're going to be a great mama.
Well, I have a little help this newborn screening, so I'm off to a good start.
For more information on this newborn screening program, call the Department of Health.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play, or sing, or dream, or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
Getting all blown to hell makes somebody feel the need to print up 10 or 15 million Power of Pride stickers. Well, sure, there's the profit angle. I know some creep made millions off What Would Jesus Do? I like those Who Would Jesus Bomb lapel pins. When did pride get crossed off the list of deadly sins? Just another law passed by some old men back in the first century A.D. to keep the people in their place.
Ooh, you gotta wonder.
There's no power in pride. Pride is a man who...
Do me a favor. If you enjoy Will Kimbrough's music, drop him a note. Tell him you heard the interview on the Head On Radio Network. You know, these guys take time out from their day to speak to people. And I don't know how often they hear from folks telling them that they appreciate their message. Everybody needs to hear that from time to time. I got an email from Brian. And Brian says you can watch on August 1st, that's tomorrow, 6:10 p.m. Eastern, shortly before this program. You might want to set your TiVo or your recorders if you know how to make it get off at midnight, like I don't. But on C-SPAN, a rerun of the 9/11 Scholars for Truth panel. And Brian notes that Stephen Jones talks about his finding of thermite on the steel at the World Trade Centers. Do that. It's worth the watch. And some of David's criticisms are very valid. It's honest to God, it's hard to take some of this seriously when... when you feel like you're part of a carny hustle. And that's not just the 9/11 thing. It's like I said, it's a problem that pervades the liberal progressive left. We're going back to the phones in a minute, but I got to get this off of my chest. I read an article in the Washington Post a week and a half or so ago about a new group that's out there. They call themselves the Democracy Alliance. And they are literally a collection of millionaires and billionaires. They gave $5 million to the Center for American Progress. They gave another cool several million to MediaMatters.org. And I want those organizations to have that kind of funding. What we need is more democracy alliances. And it would help, because one of the things that was made abundantly clear in this article is the Democracy Alliance does not want to be found. It's like something secret, like you got to know the Lodge High Sign or something. Don't find them. They'll find you if you're worthy. And the question is, what constitutes worthiness? Inside the Beltway pals? I don't know. But we are so far behind in the infrastructure. The liberal or progressive wealth infrastructure to make things happen. You know, Bart Kopp. I consider Bart a good friend of mine. He runs our ads. He's helped us grow our audience. He's got great liberal and progressive readers. And Bart has to hustle stuff. And that's not criticizing Bart. But Bart has to hustle stuff to pay the bills so he can keep on doing something that is very important. You know, the guy's got 70, 80,000 readers a day. There are newspapers in the United States that don't have a circulation that Bart Kopp's got. And it got, when it got started, Bart Kopp was out there, and he was holding down a job doing A while he was coming home and doing the page B. And it got to the point where he felt like if it was going to succeed because the mission was important, that he was going to have to give all of his time to doing the page. I check Bart Kopp every day. Because it's a great resource. The same thing goes for our buddies at WD40.com. You know, with this program, you know that your single... I was going to WhiteRoseSociety.org before Head On with Bob Kincaid was ever even a dream. If I missed Malloy one night, I'd go and check out the archive. And Ben has to hold fundraisers. And I'll be honest, it pisses me off. You know, we're going to change the tone in Washington. Thank you, Senator Kerry, with your 2.5 years too late health care plan. That's not to say it's a bad plan. And I'm sorry, I guess he's just kind of my current whipping boy because, you know, we had a chance to unseat George W. Bush. Oh, but it was the black boxes. No, okay, that had something to do with it, but it had a hell of a lot to do with the fact that he didn't fight. You know, maybe that stuff plays in the more blue states where you come out and you calmly discuss that what America needs is a new tax structure proposal. That does not play in East Aboga, Alabama, okay? And it doesn't play in left-hand West Virginia. We want to hear straight talk. You know, we're talking about the Bible Belt here, and we get accustomed to what we get from what we get out of the pulpit. And what we get out of the pulpit, baby, for the last 300 years has been fire and brimstone. And if you can't do fire and brimstone in the South, you cannot succeed. I think back to today when Mitt Romney, the governor of Massachusetts, finds out that it's not okay to call, even the Big Dig, it's not okay to call something a tar baby. Okay? He just found that out. Just figured it out because the Tar Baby goes back to an Uncle Remus story, and it wasn't always just called the Tar Baby. There was another word in front of Tar Baby, and it starts with an N, and it ends in an R, and it's really repugnant. And that word is still there, even if you don't say it when you say Tar Baby. He found this out today. We've known it for a while. And like Will Kimbrough noted, you get far enough south, and, well, bless your heart, is code, you know, how nice, is code for, you know, go to hell and hurry on the way. But we want passion. We want fire. And you know what? If you're afraid to bluntly tell somebody that they are a low-grade rip-off artist, then you're not going to succeed in the South. And maybe that's why Kerry conceded the South anyway, because he realized that he couldn't take his noble horse face down there and get and enchant the people with his long-winded oratory. Maybe. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, the BART cops, the WD40.coms of this world, that are out there hustling and trying to keep pages up and keep things on the web, and do it out of love and passion and support that they can get here and there. It ought not be that way. What am I? I'm not yelling at you. I'm sorry. But you know damn good and well that Free Republic makes money hand over fist. You know darn good and well that Powerline blog is up to its neck in money. Rush Limbaugh got his start with an infusion of think tank money from the rabid Republican right. It's not the KKK, it's the RRR, the rabid Republican right. Meanwhile, on the left, well, you know, we need to be doing this because we love it. We need to be doing this because of the passion. It's a labor of love. Had a big bowl of love lately? It's not very filling. And that's, you know, it's frustrating. You know, the Democracy Alliance, they're doing a lot of good. They got $1 bajillion. Apparently they just pumped a bunch of money into Air America. Good for them. But, you know, it's not a secret. This, you know, we'll tap you on the shoulder in the still of the night is... You really want to grow the Democratic base? You really want to start talking turkey with the American people? Let the people who can do it best do it without wondering whether the daggum power is going to be cut off or they're going to lose their internet connection. Okay. So much for tonight's sermonette. Let's go to the phones. Luke is with us. Luke, how are you?
Hello, Bob. I'm here to talk to you about the liberal base.
Oh, that's Senator Kerry. How are you doing this evening, Senator?
But, you know, the thing of it is I agree with you. It's one of those things. I was sitting there when you were talking about all this, and I went, you know what? I wish Warren Rudman had taken one of those billions. And don't get me wrong, I'm glad he's giving it to charity. But I wish he'd taken one of those billions and said, let's spread this around and have some fun with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's, you know, because like I say, I mean, you know, we need our own version, I'm sorry, of the Heritage Foundation. I mean, we need somebody out there who's spreading the money around to the different groups, like you said. I'd be like to BART Cop and to Liberal Oasis and, you know, Buzz Flash. So
you know, does it?
Can
you imagine? I mean, I feel comfortable in speaking for BART when I say that if he had an angel that would provide him with $50,000 a year, he would be thrilled beyond his wildest expectations.
Oh yeah, you were talking about. I was just thinking about sites that aren't there anymore. And one of the first sites I remember when I first came onto the net and everything learned about it was I miss Media Whores.
Oh, the horse! I was that when you said that. That's immediately what I thought of. I loved Media Whores online.
I mean, that used to be one of the first places I went.
Dried up, blew away, no money, and they were doing great work.
Oh yeah, but you know what I mean. I'm just afraid, like you say, I'm afraid down the line that's what we're going to find is, you know, if somebody doesn't. You know, and like I say, there's people out there that's got the money. You know what I mean? It's one of these things where some of them just don't want to be seen as that active. It's like, get off your butt. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, okay, you know.
But they want to control them.
That's fine, but give the money out to the people who really need it.
Yeah, well, some of it, Luke, is a control fetish, too.
I know.
All right. You know, say, Well, say you want to give money to Bart Cop, and you've got $50,000 a year to give him. It always comes with strings. You know, okay, Bart, you can do this, but you can't make fun of religion because, you know, we want to get those values voters back. And or, you know, Bart, you know, you got to do this or you got to do that. And I'm sorry to use Bart for the example, but you get what I'm saying. There's always strings. Oh, yeah, well, we want to see a quarterly report. We want to see where every last damn dime went. You know, don't you send something first class in the mail that you could send bulk rate.
It's one of those things. It's like, please just let me pick the right six numbers. You know?
Yeah, well,
I would love taking a big portion of it just to do that, just to have the fun of waving it at other people, going, guess what?
Yeah.
You know, if you like, say I just finished it up again. I was reading through it again. I was telling you about what liberal media, and he's got a chapter in there where he explains, you know, things like Richard Mellon Scaife. If you want to know how somebody spent money and set up a big chunk of all this stuff on the right, is he's got a chapter talking about Richard Mellon Scaife and the Heritage Foundation and all those groups.
The Arkansas Project.
Yeah. I mean, you just follow that thing like a flow chart. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay. But you know what I mean? That's like I say, there's people on the left that's got the money. They just got to do it.
Some of these things are failures that happened 30 years ago, Luke, because these things, you know, right, I'm not kidding, and most history will bear me out, right after Barry Goldwater got his ass handed to him by LBJ, all those people that were behind him said, never again.
Well, you know, it's one of the things I always ticks me off is I guess it'd be about 86. What would have happened in 86 if they had impeached Reagan?
Oh, I know, but Ben Bradley and Katherine Graham said, America can't stand another crisis like this.
But, I mean, can you imagine what that would have done to the conservative movement? That would have ripped them apart.
Well, my God, the MSNBC poll that's out there that's been up for a while, 285,000 or something like that responses, 82% say impeach Bush now.
Or at least have the hearing. I mean, you know, they ought to at least be... Like Conyers thing, you know, it's like saying he didn't necessarily say do it, but he says at least have the hearings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like I say, we can't do it right now because if we did, it'd be, I saw the article not too long, yesterday or other day over on, Crooks and Liars. It's like, you know, we're still waiting on that Pap Roberts report. Been now 3 years, four years.
Well, how long ago did Harry Reid shut down the Senate? 6 months? Eight months ago?
A little bit further than that, but yeah, roughly that.
He shut the Senate down, and you know, Pat Roberts came out just squealing. Oh, he was, and Bill Frist, you know, I have never seen anything so disgraceful in the entire history of the South.
Because that report was supposed to have been out at 2004.
Yeah.
The second half of that report, I should say.
Right, and
the first half came out real quick.
Mm-hmm.
The part that said CIA was all did it all. And, well, okay, now we're going to look at the report that says about how the White House used this information. Oh, I'm sorry, that's going to take a little while to put together.
Dog ate it. Yeah.
I agree.
And we are still waiting.
I know.
And we're going to keep waiting because it is, by God, not going to come out in an election year.
Oh, I know. Hey, I meant to ask, did you like that email I sent you, the thing about from the Times about the Reverend Boyd?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, there's one at least, you know, who's a... Who apparently makes sense. Well, we can't have him out there, my God.
He's a dangerous one.
You want to get politics out of religion? Whoa, you. It's like I'm just waiting until, I'm sure tomorrow we'll start hearing it. You saw all the stuff today they're talking about now. Was it the company and the FDA are wanting to make the morning after pill over the counter?
Yeah.
I'm sure that report will be destroyed. Oh, no, this is the wrong report. No. You have to use this one here that we've had written that says you can't do this, ever.
Yeah, and the story about Vioxx, I caught that yesterday evening. Turns out the entire Bush FDA tried to destroy a doctor within the FDA.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, think what they did to the doctor down at NASA, you know, over the global warming thing. He said you cannot talk to anybody, ever.
Off to the gulag with you.
He'd be happy. I ain't surprised they didn't try that. Because, I mean, essentially it's like you can't talk to anybody unless they talk to us first.
And now they've quietly removed studying the planet and protecting the home planet from the NASA mission statement. Ah, these, you know.
Well, that's okay. I'm sure we're going to turn it over to Falwell soon. You know how it is.
Yeah, and then we'll find out that the sun revolves around the earth. Oh, God, I know, Luke.
Let's dig up Copernicus. Let's kill him again.
Yeah, well, you know, they did that in the Middle Ages, and that's kind of the mindset we've got here. They dug up a couple of Knights Templars, a couple of popes a couple of times, and chopped them up, threw them in the river, burned them, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, this is the mindset we've got.
Like, you know, we'll kill him once, we'll kill him again. So we'll do it until we get it right. You know how it is.
Exactly. Hey, Luke, we got to hit the news, brother.
That's the hour.
All right, later.
See ya.
Bye. To the news, and then we'll come back with more of your phone calls. You know the number, of course, 877-443-2366. It's Monday. I've missed the conversation. Jump right in. This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Israel is now reportedly planning to expand its ground offensive in southern Lebanon and has called up thousands of reservists. Meanwhile, Syria's prime minister told his country's military today to be ready for action. That comes after an Israeli airstrike yesterday that killed up to 60 civilians and sparked calls around the world for a ceasefire. But Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says Hezbollah militants must first release the two Israeli soldiers they've been holding captive for 3 weeks. Thousands of residents in southern Lebanon took advantage of a brief halt in strikes to flee north. Israel had agreed to a 48-hour halt in its campaign, but reserved the right to strike targets that pose an immediate threat. Today, one soldier was killed when Israel hit a Lebanese military truck that the army mistakenly believed was carrying militants. At the White House, President Bush is meeting with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. She returned to Washington this evening after abruptly ending a trip to the Middle East. In Baghdad today, gunmen kidnapped at least 26 people. 12 of them were taken from the Iraqi American Chamber of Commerce, 14 others from a communications company. Also today, at least 27 people were either killed or found dead. In Washington, Democratic leaders in Congress are now calling for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq by the end of the year. At the United Nations, the Security Council says Iran only has 1 month to suspend its uranium enrichment program. If it doesn't, economic and diplomatic sanctions could follow. But Iran immediately rejected the demand, maintaining that its nuclear program is peaceful. In Jalalabad, Afghanistan, at least 8 Afghans were killed in a car bombing today. 5 police officers and 3 children are among the dead. The violence came as NATO forces took command of the south from the U.S.-led coalition. In Washington, a Senate committee said today that it will wait until September to vote on whether to permanently appoint John Bolton as U.S. ambassador. Democrats say they want more time to investigate his previous behavior. Last year, President Bush appointed Bolton to the post on an interim basis. In North New Orleans today, an appellate court debated whether former Congressman Tom DeLay's name should remain on the Texas ballot. The court indicated that the decision would depend on whether it could be proven that he moved to Virginia. Republicans want to replace his name with another candidate, but Democrats want his name to stay. DeLay resigned last month. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to QualityNewsNetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Northwest Airlines flight attendants rejected a proposed contract today that could set the stage for a strike. The parent company, United Airlines, is reporting its first quarterly profit in 6 years, with revenue growth at 16%. Revenue reportedly grew to $5.11 billion from last year's $4.42 billion. The FDA is considering a proposal to allow the morning-after pill to be sold over-the-counter to adult women. Bar Pharmaceuticals manufactures a pill called Plan B. Cigarette maker Reynolds American posted a 50% increase in second quarter profits. Company officials credit both higher selling prices and productivity. Nissan is donating $200,000 to Lebanon to help the country's refugees. The company's CEO is a Lebanese native. Defense contractor Northrop Grumman has reportedly put its navigation systems unit up for sale. The Wall Street Journal says it could get as much as $1 billion. Global banking giant HSBC has posted better-than-expected profits for the first half of the year, up 18% to $12.5 billion. The company credits strong growth in emerging markets and investment banking. Avon Products reports a 54% loss in its second quarter profits. Light Sweet Crude settled at $74.40 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 34 points, NASDAQ down 3, S&P 500 down 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
6.5 minutes past the hour here in the remote, undisclosed location in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West Virginia. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's a Monday night's worth of Head On. And as I said before we went to the news, let's go straight back to the phones. It's conversation radio, man. David is with us from Middle Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Bob.
How are you?
Quite well, quite well. You know, the high temperature today wasn't what it was supposed to be, and we were very appreciative of that. So, once again, just as Rush has told us for 4, 5, 6 weeks, there is no global warming, none of this is happening, don't worry about it. But that's another story.
Yes.
As far as good Senator Kerry, and I say that lovingly, you know, I want to offer a possible correction to what you said. You know, it's not simply being long-winded. There are speakers in the South that have mesmerized people.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Going back 250 years, and they might go for 3 hours under a tree in the heat of the day, but they had pacing, and they had punch, and they had a way of engaging the audience.
The Lincoln-Douglas debates took 6 hours.
And I don't think there was a man in the audience that left to pee for the whole time.
No.
Not even guys my age. Because they couldn't wait for the next word. But if you have one tone and it... All right, I don't need to do that.
Yeah, that just hurts.
Yeah, exactly. So does Senator Kerry. Gosh, if he could just become Alvin the Chipmunk, it might be more listable.
Don't take me there.
While you're laughing, I want everybody outside my little world, which is the middle of Tennessee, and Nashville is the middle of the middle of Tennessee. Mr. Will Kimbrough gets a lot of phone calls. Mr. Will Kimbrough has a lot to do. I dare say that man doesn't return every phone call he gets. All of your listeners should realize that the fact that Will Kimbrough spent 45 minutes talking to you means that he cares about what you're doing. I want to put that little bouquet at your feet and make sure the listeners around the world understand that there's a guy that spent time that he wouldn't spend with something he didn't care about.
I think you're right. And yeah. I think, you know, I think it's a willingness to reach out to people who have hungered for the kind of music that he's putting out there, David.
It's what you're doing, and it's what he's doing, and it's a meeting of the two, and it really does matter.
I can't compare what I'm doing to what he's doing. I mean, no, I've got too much respect for musicians.
I won't. Let's not go into that discussion, because that one could take forever. But this weekend, there was a moment involving our Secretary of State. Well, several moments involving the United States Secretary of State. She's traveling. She's doing what she does. And George Bush, I believe, and all of his neocon handlers and neocon freaks have placed great stock in this outlook on the world that the Israelis have developed. Preemptive strikes, if we know it's right, then we're going to do it, and the rest of the world can go where the rest of the world will go. And she's traveling, and she's spending time with this leader, and she's spending time with that leader, and she has a breakfast with the leaders of Israel, and oh, then they go on to a little news conference, and the next thing you know, she finds out that 8 full hours before she's spending time with her diplomatic equivalent, as part of the nation of Israel, before she's spending time with that fellow, they've killed 50 people, women and children mostly, in a building that almost certainly was of questionable military value. And suddenly she gets a message from a subordinate who got an email from another subordinate who da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And suddenly she finds out, oops, 50 people in Kana have been killed, and none of them really matter in a military sense.
Yeah.
She just handed her diplomatic head, she had it handed to her. The Israelis just broke it off in her. They disrespected her.
Yes.
And here she was, traipsing around the Middle East, spouting the neocon dictum, talking about this, talking about that. We're going to create a new Middle East. I know you've called her kind of sleazy, but I'm sorry. Up until that moment, Sunday morning, when she was embarrassed beyond all belief, I'm sorry. I think there's a new nickname that was could have been applied for the past 36 hours to Sunday morning. It was condescenda, right?
Oh, ain't that the truth?
She was going to just waltz through the Middle East. Well, we just can't avoid these several hundred, or is it more than that? I'm not sure. We just can't be impeded by these several hundred women and children being killed by the Israelis. Oh, it's their right to defend themselves against those women and children. It's the most disgusting, condescending crap I may have ever seen. And then the nation that we created with our approval and our money, your money, my money.
Yeah.
Without our money, they ain't going very far. And they embarrassed her. And this business of, I've decided not to go to Lebanon.
They did everything short of peeing on her shoes.
Well, or some other part of her excruciatingly appropriate high-priced attire.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the shoes because we know she has one of those Imelda fetishes.
Oh, yeah. Ferragamo. Exactly. It starts at Ferragamo and goes up.
Yeah, those are her slumming shoes, the Ferragamos.
Yeah, she mows the yard in Ferragamo. But seriously,
that's her polo. That's her polo match divot stomping shoes.
Exactly. I personally, I think Ms. Rice is on the verge of having a Colin Powell moment. I think Ms. Rice is on the verge of having a moment where, wait a second, what we're doing is absolute BS. What we're doing is really ugly. She might be on the verge. Now, she'll recoil, and she'll pull it together, and she'll toe the company line, and she'll spout the right thing. But she was embarrassed around the world. And then W goes to Miami, and he starts spouting that stuff about this all started because Hezbollah captured three Iraqi soldiers. Three Israeli soldiers. No.
Well, you know, back up.
Before that.
Nobody is correcting the big lie that's sort of out there. And it took me a while to find out the facts. And, you know, you know how it is with me and facts. It's like, you know, Keith Richards and heroin. We're attached. Hezbollah invaded Israel and kidnapped, you know, they have to say kidnapped. They can't say captured. Killed nine, captured two. That's a lie. And the world knows it now, but here in the great big gulag that is the United States media, we're not told. The Israelis had crossed into Lebanese territory when they were attacked by Hezbollah.
Precisely.
We can't know that, though.
No, we can't. I hope the email that I forwarded to you reached you about a friend that I went to high school with. Lives in Jordan now.
Yes, I did read that.
I'm sorry?
I did read that.
And this is a person that's my age that was just a person graduating from high school, and a year out of high school, she is courted and she is married, and suddenly she's living in Jordan. When I was 21 and struggling through the engineering program at the University of Tennessee, she was living in Jordan. That was 1965. She's lived there ever since. And she has a remarkable view of the world. And this is nobody's Harvard liberal. This is just another East Tennessean that, you know, took a chance on something. Took a chance on love, really. Pardon the pun. Pardon the foolish phrase. And she ended up in Jordan. And it's been this wonderful reconnection for she and I, because I get to hear from somebody that goes back a lot of years. And lo and behold, when people in this country say, oh, no, the Americans are loved around the world. Well, yep, we're not. And we're not doing very well, you know, with just working class folks that have a comprehensive view of what's going on. We're not doing very well.
No, we're not well thought of at all. And David, I want to share something with you, if I may, please.
Please do.
I watched the story of that massacre of those children and adults, and I have seen stuff today that just made my stomach turn from apologists like Alan Dershowitz. You know, those children got in the way of the bomb. Yeah, literally.
Oh, I know.
But I kept reading that, Q-A-N-A, 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 and I know, you know, the Q is a stand-in for another consonant, whatever. But something in the back of my tiny little mind, David, was sort of niggling at me. It was like an itch you can't scratch, or when that tickle before the flu sets in starts in the back of your throat.
Oh, jeez.
And I kept looking at the place that they bombed. And I kept wondering and wondering, and then you know, it finally hit me. I want to share something with you from the book of John, if I may, please.
So it's not just the 10 years prior to right now where the Israelis generated a huge black eye. This is further back than that.
On the third day, there, chapter 2, verse 1. On the third day of the book of John.
Thank you.
On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now, both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding, and when they ran out of wine, You know, that tells you a little something about him and the boys. And when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Now there were set there 6 water pots of stone according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. 20 or 30 gallons! Sorry. Partay. Yeah. But anyway, you know how it all works out, and then the master comes and says, you know, most of the cheapskates put out a little bit of the good stuff, and then later on they bring out the cheap stuff after everybody's all good and liquored up, but you've saved the best for last. Now, I can work that probably for the remainder of the program, David. But the kicker here, and this was the tickle in the back of the throat. This was the itch I couldn't scratch. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee.
So the parable of water and wine happened in that city.
Jesus' first alleged miracle. Did it happen? Did it not happen? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, it was at Cana in Galilee, and if you want to get right down to it, that bride and that bridegroom who consummated their marriage that night 2,000 years ago in Cana, their great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandbaby got bombed by the Israelis 2 days ago.
Let's make it a bit more technical. Even though you and I aren't technical,
mm-hmm.
That bride and groom's DNA could be found in that town today.
That bride and groom's lineage died. Died. Just dead. Just gone.
Died because George Bush made sure the bombs and the jet fuel and the fighter planes and the money to train the troops and the tacit, absolute, well, not even tacit, the, oh yeah, please go ahead.
The Department of Defense, when you absolutely, positively have to bomb them overnight. Makes me sick. And I mean, I sat down, and it rapture-ready Christians. People sitting around rooting for this to happen. Alan Dershowitz writing blog entries that say it's the children's fault for getting blown to bits. It is sickening in the extreme.
That is so disgusting. That's incomprehensibly evil and short-sighted and foolish and stupid. Oh.
Makes you kind of ache, doesn't it?
It does. It really is. It's a horror.
Well, and what's that line in Will Kimbrough's song about pride? You know, and you what? I forget what he calls him, but you know, some SOB made a fortune off of "What Would Jesus Do?"
Among many other lines in that man's work, in that man's poetry, and his lyrics are poetry. Make no mistake about it. His lyrics are poetry. Separate them from the music, and they can easily stand alone.
I had I'll be honest, David. I hadn't heard anything that was as profoundly in your face about these things since I listened to Jason Ringenberger's Empire Builder.
And I'm thrilled to hear you say that, because those are the guys that are a layer or two down from the people that everyone else around the world hears of. You know, for every Faith and for every Kenny Chesney, there are 50 Jason Ringenberg, there are 50 Will Kimbroughs, there are 50 Phil Lees, there are 50 Kevin Gordons, and they're all right here in Nashville. For the last 70 years, this town has drawn. If you're the best guitar player in Butte, Montana, you come to Nashville. If you're the best guitar player in Chillicothe, Ohio, you come to Nashville. If you're the best songwriter in Kankakee, Illinois, you come to Nashville.
If you're the best rising singer in Australia,
you come to Nashville. Yes, boy, is that the truth? And the fact that Mr. Kimbrough has been home for 5 weeks out of 4 years, and that's the longest time in 4 years he's been home, that speaks volumes.
Yeah.
That speaks volumes. And it's just so disappointing.
Well, you know, he mentioned touring with Rodney Crowell. I hope he gets to do it again, because I'd like to hear some. I'd like for him to play some of that for Rodney's audience.
Well, once you've made contact with him, you know, who knows what'll happen next. So.
Yep.
It could be.
It could indeed. And I love the fact that I had no idea they had written that piece of work tune that Toby Keith and Jimmy Buffett recorded. But yeah, I can't overemphasize how important it is for voices like his to get out, David, and start talking to the people who think, you know, I voted for George Bush because I voted for family values.
Well, there are a lot of people that are making sure, one at a time, a song or two at a time, a phone call at a time, an email at a time, there are a bunch of people that are making sure that people like Ringenberg, people like Kimbrough are getting exposure, because there's this word of mouth that goes on, and at the same time, there's that word of mouth at the very top of the food chain. We have men like Mel Gibson making anti-Semitic diatribes.
Yeah.
Spewing.
And now he's gone into rehabilitation to help with his alcohol. You know, did the alcohol say this stuff? No, I don't think so. You know,
if any psychiatrist, any person that knows this stuff, I don't care if you are a Native American shaman 300 years ago, whether in the modern terminology you call it the id or you just call it part of your spirit. If a hallucinogenic loosens it and it comes out of your mind, it's not the hallucinogenic that created it.
It was there in the first place.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson is an anti-Semitic. If you...
Well, the apple falleth not far from the tree, David. His daddy lives about 20 miles from me, and he moved to West Virginia because he said there ain't no Jews there. Came as a big surprise to one of my best friends. I'm not a member of the tribe? I didn't get the memo.
I remember that, and I thought of that today, actually yesterday, when this began to break. And I'm sorry. This passion movie that the man made and, you know, conned that aged, infirm, demented Pope into signing on to it, the idea that, I'm sorry, most of that movie is a terrible indictment of the Jewish nation, and it's unfair.
And it's wrong.
The only thing Mel Gibson left out of the Passion of the Christ was the phrase, Christ killer.
Mm-hmm. And not speaking Aramaic, I'm not sure that it wasn't in there.
Exactly. And now, he gets a DUI. You know, I can commiserate with him for a DUI. I have that on my record.
So does the president.
And I vividly remember the pressure I felt at that moment about hating the moment that I was in. But I didn't suddenly start screaming that Jews cause all wars.
No.
All I wanted was 8 police officers not to hurt me.
you apparently weren't too loaded. Yeah. But then again, you know, Mel, what? I read somewhere that he had a bottle of tequila in the car that was I'm a pessimist. It was a quarter empty. It was 3/4 full. We're talking about 4 or 5 shots of tequila. I know 98-pound college girls who can do 5 shots of tequila without,
Well, who knows? You know, at a friendly bar in Malibu, I mean, the man simply stated, I own Malibu. Who knows what he did before he left the bar? I mean, he could have stepped up and said, friend, I'd like a bottle of Cuervo to go.
Cuervo.
I'm sorry.
Cuervo.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. The Cuervo traditional is really good tequila. We'll talk about that another time. But anyway, you know, if you're the mayor of Malibu, who's to say the guy's not going to go, yes, sir, Mr. Gibson, would you like one or two? Who knows what he'd
have? Nah, see, that's the thing. I think Mel Gibson's a big old, I use the word advisedly. He's a big old sissy, okay? Can't carry his tequila. Dances with the light, starts thinking about dancing with the lampshade on after half-warm Budweiser number two.
Oh, what was that wonderful film critic? Her name escapes me, but all I remember is that after Dances with Wolves, her criticism, you know, one short paragraph about, you know, nice color in the sky and the music wasn't that bad, but frankly, the movie should have been retitled Dances with Camera.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that kind of settled it. When she said that about him, well, I mean, every movie the man's ever done, it's about getting your heart ripped out and, you know.
Oh, Braveheart? Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. It's all about death and destruction. And now he's got another one coming out in 5 months called Apocalypto.
Yeah, it's about the fall of the Maya nation in 1000 A.D., because they didn't accept Jesus, as far as I can tell. It's just crazy stuff.
Well, just the title tells me, I mean, apocalypse, okay, I understand that word. Well, if you're an American that thinks if you just simply scream the English as we speak it, if you just scream the American language loud enough with an O on the end, a Spanish speaker will understand you. Apocalypse.
Well, see, I missed that. I thought it was a story about Mayan civilization set to a soundtrack that involved a steel drum band.
Well, that's more.
But that was Apocalypso. My bad.
Yeah. Well, that's more of those little islands. But when I saw that, I mean, tonight on some stupid show, because I was curious about any details I could find about Mel's tribulation. You know, his little.
Oh, he'll be here all week.
Several stations of his cross. I was thinking, well, I'll watch this. And then I hear that, you know, some guy came on and was talking about his movie Apocalypto. And I thought, how could anybody title a movie Apocalypto? I mean, couldn't you do better than that?
I don't think so. David, we got to roll.
Well, Bob, thanks for the chance. And thank you again for making contact with a guy like Will Kimbrough. Tremendous musician, great voice. A guy that cares about America.
He does indeed. Thank you, David.
You bet.
Have a great evening.
You too.
Bye now. Quick break, then we come back to the phones. This is the Head On Radio Network. A few minutes left to get your licks in if you want to. 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob.
There inside of me, all that guilt for all to see.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly $300,000 is the expected amount a couple retiring today would need to have in the bank to cover premiums for health care and out-of-pocket expenses. That's according to a study by the Employee Benefit Research Institute. With the average life expectancy in the U.S. in the mid-80s, $295,000 would be needed, and the longer they live beyond that, the more the couple will need to pay, upwards of $550,000 for a couple living to the age of 95. Those numbers are in addition to having health insurance. Paul Fronston authored the report.
many people have not sat down to focus on how much money they'll need for their expenses generally in retirement, let alone their health care expenses.
On top of that, Fronston said his report only focuses on basic health care costs after retirement, so it could be even higher.
We don't even take into account how much money you might need if you go into a nursing home. That's been estimated at $70,000 a year.
New Orleans is still very much a city of suffering in need of help to rebuild. Two unions, SEIU and the Laborers International Union, are joining forces to help people in New Orleans get job training and good jobs with the New Orleans Workers Center. Randy Mayhew is director of organizing for the laborers.
We have a unique opportunity, a once-in-a-generation lifetime chance to not only rebuild New Orleans the correct way, by not just concrete and steel, but also people's lives, where we can have a living wage, where people can actually live life instead of just endure it.
Mayhew says the unions are joined by faith groups, ACORN, and the NAACP in offering a wide array of social service help that goes beyond the traditional job training that these worker centers offer. Mayhew says many parts of New Orleans are still scarred by the catastrophe caused by Katrina.
Still, just rows and rows of abandoned homes, still cars turned over. I mean, there's places where it looks just like it used to look last November.
Here is today's economic report. Have the loss of jobs over the last 5 years been the result of trade? Not according to a study conducted by the McKinsey Quarterly. According to their research, only 314,000 jobs were lost due to trade, with service sector offshoring resulting in the loss of even fewer jobs. McKinsey says weak domestic demand, rapid productivity growth, and the strength of the U.S. dollar, all dampening exports.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I'm feeling better. Now, I had a blast. I had an absolute blast yesterday at the big Democratic three-county party at Wayne's place. But I do miss the opportunity to be behind this microphone. Maybe the next time something like that goes down, we'll plan in advance and we'll do a remote. That would be cool. So let's go back to the phones. Jim is joining us. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
You know, in spite of the fact that John Kerry may sound droll at times, how I do wish that he were the person I would be hearing from the Oval Office today.
Oh, I wish he was in the Oval Office too, Jim. Don't get me wrong. I wish he would have fought hard enough to get there.
I just don't like, you know, I think he did the very best he possibly could.
Well, I think you and I part company on that because he completely abandoned the southern United States.
Oh, well, I mean, you know.
I mean, they said it out front. We're conceding the entire South to George Bush, and I think that's a recipe for disaster.
Well, you know, you just don't throw good money at bad, and I think that's basically what drove that train. But I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Totally unrelated to John Kerry. And you made reference to thermite earlier with the World Trade Center complex.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that? I mean, thermite, of course, is in the same family as C4, is it not?
That's my understanding. High explosives, you know.
Well, What were you talking about?
There is one of these 9/11 people studying 9/11, Stephen Jones, I believe it is, who claims that residual traces of thermite were found on the structural steel from the collapsed Twin Towers. Now, there's no thermite in jet fuel. And there's no thermite in fuselage parts.
So basically, this person is alluding or making reference or accusing someone of placing demolition charges in Twin Towers, right?
That's what one would infer, yes. I'm not endorsing that. I don't know the science behind it. But he claims that traces of thermite were found on the structural steel of the Twin Towers.
That would be indeed a very dangerous path to prod.
Yeah. And by dangerous, I take it that, yeah, people get disappeared over that kind of stuff.
I'm afraid you're right.
I'm told by our good friend Cossack in the chat room that thermite is a combination of iron oxide and aluminum powder.
Okay. Did he say what the charging mechanism was?
No. We don't know. It's also said to be undetectable by bomb-sniffing dogs. So, you know, like I said before, I'm not going to go off and say, yes, this happened, or no, that didn't happen. I am content right now, for my purposes, to say that we have not been given the full story. We have not been told the full truth. And, frankly, my concern, you know, and I've said this on a number of occasions, Jim, my concern with 9/11 is that in constantly looking backward at it, we are missing what's going on right under our noses for the next one.
Well, if, in fact, there is a possibility of something like that having happened, it might be something that could be somewhat prophylactic, I should say.
Yeah. But I think with this crowd, I mean, look at the way the Middle East has been handled.
Well, I'm not talking about the Middle East.
No, but I'm talking about their overall competence and their overall willingness to create havoc and mayhem and hell on earth.
I mean, I'm not making any apologies, nor have I ever been an apologist on this program or in any way for the policies of this current administration. You know that.
Sure.
But, I mean, you know, hell, we don't even know really what happened to Abraham Lincoln.
Or Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of, you know, I mean, Oliver Stone has his view of Kennedy there. The Warren Commission has their view. And when I read, have you ever read the Warren Commission?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, do you remember the first 50 pages were devoted to the dentition of somebody's mother?
I remember massive amounts of dental. I mean, I don't know where it fell, but I know there were massive amounts of dental data.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know how they could have gotten that.
I believe it's Stephen Jones who wrote the book regarding the 9/11 Commission's report, and just in very it appears to me scholarly fashion lays out all the stuff that's not in there that was public, you know, publicly available. There was nothing exhaustive about the 9/11 Commission's report. It, you know, Lee Hamilton was involved with it. It was a whitewash. That man's a whitewash specialist. He's the man who whitewashed Iran-Contra from the Democratic side, no less, for Reagan and Bush.
Well, I just don't know. All I know is what I don't understand and what is more damning than any evidence of thermite or any type of chemical is the fact that what they say about not being able to envision an airplane being used as a Molotov cocktail is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, when they moved George to a luxury yacht off the Italian coast for the Genoa G8?
Summit in Genoa,
yeah.
Summer before, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, these theories are interesting, and they are.
Well, just for further information, I'm getting some fascinating stuff from the from the very knowledgeable folks in the chat room, Jim. Thermite burns at 4,532 degrees Fahrenheit. And a thermite reaction is defined as an aluminothermic reaction in which aluminum metal is oxidized by the oxide of another metal, most commonly iron oxide.
Well, those are your basic structural components of the twin towers.
What?
Aluminum and iron.
Yeah, but not in its oxidized form.
Well, he could do that, Bob.
I don't think, but again, 4,532 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, I mean,
burning jet fuel
pouring down the center of that building because all the load-bearing walls were on the outside. It was nothing but just a hollow shell.
But even burning jet fuel doesn't reach 4,532 Fahrenheit.
Pretty quickly, buddy. Pretty quickly. It gets pretty hot.
No, it's kerosene.
Poured down an empty stovepipe, that's just, Just food for thought there.
Yeah, sure.
But like I say, the Japanese architect of that building used iron and used aluminum, and he had all the load-bearing structure on the outside so they could put more on the inside, and in the middle where the elevator passed. I don't know if you've ever been in the World Trade Center.
No, I have not.
Okay, yeah. Well, I have. I was just destroyed when those lovely buildings were taken down, but nonetheless.
Yeah, but it's hard, honest to God, Jim, it's hard to contemplate something like 9/11 without thinking back to, and, this is the days of Kennedy when the CIA came to him with Operation Northwoods.
Yeah.
You remember Operation Northwoods? That's when the CIA had a plan to start a war with Cuba, and this is public record now, a plan to start a war with Cuba by bombing one of our own cities and blaming it on Castro.
Oh, yeah, they had so many covert things going on. They had Mongoose, and they had Northwoods, and they had all kinds of crazy things going on. And, of course, now there are lots of programs out on the history channels about all the efforts that were made to kill Castro through LSD and the ventilation, poison cigars, poison...
shaving cream, make his beard fall out.
If they could, a poison condom. Who knows? I don't. But, obviously, I don't know why security was so lax in Dallas that day, and we'll never know, probably, because all that's been closed.
Well, I don't know why the United States Air Force was stood down on 9/11 either, but it was.
Yeah, it's true. But anyway, I just wondered about the iron and aluminum oxide thing because, like I said, those metals, when they could burn iron, pretty quickly when subjected to intense heat, maybe aviation fuel, high octane fuel. But anyway,
I know you're a big reader, Jim. Dr. David Ray Griffin is the guy you want to read on 9/11. He's the guy who took apart the 9/11 Commission report. Almost word by word and page by page. David Ray Griffin.
Yeah, I have that report here at home, and I've read it.
But his book on analyzing it is fast becoming the textbook.
Well, let me
for
ask
what's
you one
there.
Other thing, and I'm
sure.
What about the plane that hit the wall of the Pentagon? Did they find the remnants of the aircraft?
It depends on what you read. There are photographs out there and series of photographs that paint a very disturbing picture. If you watch the video, and you can get it just by Googling for something called Loose Change, Jim. excuse me.
Okay.
If you watch Loose Change, you'll see that they show, for instance, a photograph of the Yugoslavian. President's Palace or something like that that was hit by a cruise missile, and the hole looks surprisingly like the hole in the Pentagon. But no wings, no
structural remains of an aircraft, of the aircraft.
No, the biggest piece of structural remains of the alleged jumbo jet that hit the Pentagon is something that you and I could probably wrap our arms around.
Well, did they find anything or not?
Not that I'm aware of.
I think you would find something of that aircraft.
You know, and it's the skullduggery involved. They went around to every security camera on hotels, gas stations, everywhere. The FBI went around, gathered up every single security camera tape that was there, and it just disappeared.
When it hit the wall of the Pentagon.
Yeah, well, after the explosion, after the attack, whatever, they gathered it all up, and it was never heard from again.
Okay, well, I just wondered if they found any I mean, they're pretty good forensics. It's a pretty highly developed science, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That they could find,
you know, no bodies
there, and I just never really delved into that. But I here again, I don't know.
Well, you might find it interesting to read Dr. David Ray Griffin's book.
Okay.
All right, Jim. Take care.
You
too. Bye now. And again. Tomorrow evening at 6:10 p.m. Eastern Time on C-SPAN, they will rerun the panel discussion on 9/11. Watch it and judge for yourself. I think our earlier caller, our friend David in Maine, I think many of his objections are valid. It did from time to time look an awful lot like an infomercial because, you know, we got to beg. You know, our friend Lottie in the chat room notes that if you watch the videos of the World Trade Center burning, you'll see black smoke, and that signifies incomplete combustion, which means the kerosene, which is the jet fuel, didn't even reach 600 degrees Fahrenheit. Which, you know, this isn't even a Swiss cheese, the holes in the government's account of 9/11, because if this was a Swiss cheese, there wouldn't be any cheese. It would be all whole. So, you know, thank you, everyone, for participating as you did this evening. Our special thanks go out to Will Kimbrough for joining us and sharing his music with us and sharing his thoughts. Remember, you can order the album Americanitis at www.will, with two L's, Will Kimbrough, KIMBROUGH.com. And as our friend David in Tennessee suggested, let him know you heard the interview. It'll mean something to him. Tomorrow, and a reminder, a very, very special, another special guest on the program, someone that I've listened to literally for decades, Al Stewart is going to join us. Now, Will Kimbrough brought us the perspective of the Southerner who dares question the motives for this war. One of the things that Al Stewart is most noted for is his historical perspective that he brings to life in his music. And he'll join us at the top of the program around 7:15 Eastern, 4:15 Pacific. And I hope you'll join us for that because I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation. Because the man has a profound grip on history's ability to repeat itself for those who do not bother to learn from it. 7:15 Eastern tomorrow, Al Stewart. And I also want to send out all the good wishes in the world that I can to our good friend Ed Wiley, who on August the 2nd, which is day after tomorrow, will begin a walk from Charleston, West Virginia, to Washington, D.C., in the name of helping the children who have to attend school at Marsh Fork Elementary, literally breathing the carcinogenic filth that is coal dust and the various and sundry chemicals that they use to, you know, you can see pictures. Yeah, they're 450 feet down and 200 feet back from something like 2 billion gallons of cancer-causing goo held back by a dirt dam. No kidding, dirt. And then right next to the school is a coal preparation plant run by Massey Energy. You know, why Don Blankenstein still has, or Blankenship still has a job, I don't know. They lost 98% from the previous quarter, Massey did. Him, he's still getting millions of dollars every year for doing that to that company. Of course, it's Massey, and I frankly don't care if they go out of business tomorrow because they're sleazy. So Ed Wiley, in the name of trying to help those children at Marsh Fork Elementary get a new school building, is walking starting August 2nd, walking from Charleston to Washington, D.C. If you're anywhere near Charleston and you believe that these children deserve a better future than what they're being handed now by a negligent governor's office, a negligent EPA, a negligent Raleigh County School Board, join us. I'm going to be there. Join us on the back stairs of the Capitol building in Charleston at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, August the 2nd. I'm so proud to be associated with these folks. It's inspiring to see what real fight looks like in this poor, tormented, once great nation. That's it for this evening. My darling wife, Agnes, produced the program. Brian Reznor announces. The chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream and the archives of all the programs on the Horn, as well as many other wonderful liberal talk programs. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services, is our IT professional in Tallahassee, Florida. Many thanks go out to our good friend Gene, the News Ninja, who keeps us up to date on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website. All of the programs on the Horn happen because thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights get up every day and go to work and build the American dream for themselves, their families, their friends, and their neighbors. And by supporting the Horn, they're helping to save the American dream. Don't forget, noon Eastern tomorrow, please join us for the debut of the Dr. Bill O'Brien Show. You will be glad you did. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.